Thanks, Steve. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. From what I read in the papers, Wendy, the Cubs are going to appear in a World Series tonight.
I see a lot of Cubs wear going on.
I just saw
Dean Richards on TV wearing a Cubs hat, and I look at you, Cubs hat.
Yeah, we're hoping that the Cubs win.
They need to do it. They really need to do it.
Mm-hmm. It would be nice. It would be very
nice. It's going to be so heartbreaking if they don't.
I don't even think there's any suspense.
Do you feel overconfidence, but do you feel suspense? Because I don't either,
no,
Steve.
No, it's not overconfidence, not bragging. It's not. I'm not playing.
It's a great team.
It's just a very good team, and it's not like in the past years when we were wishing and hoping. I just expect it.
Yeah. Yep. Now, let's throw into the mix this Kyle Schwarber story. And I don't know if you've been following this at all, Wendy. Have you?
He might be back.
He is,
on the
he
roster?
Is back.
Okay.
They named him. He's in.
That's more than you thought
He's
I
in.
Knew.
Well, all right. So a little bit of the backstory for people who don't know it. But if you're a Cubs fan, I'm guessing you do. Kyle Schwarber just was incredible last year during the playoffs.
The
five
Schwarber
home runs.
Ball?
Yes.
Knee problems right away, huh?
Well, he collided with another player, and he was out after, was it the fourth game of the season, Steve? I want to say the fourth, third or fourth.
Yeah,
very early.
Yeah,
I remember that.
At the time, they said Kyle Schwarber is lost to us for the season. And, of course, we all imagine that meant postseason as well. But all of a sudden, over the weekend, there's all these reports surfacing that they've sent him to the fall league to get some at-bats. They didn't expect this to happen, but his doctor said he's more than a month ahead of schedule, so take some swings and see what you got. But what a nice bonus this would be, especially, you know, they play when they're in Cleveland, they use the designated hitter for the World Series. When they're in Chicago, they will not. So he would essentially be their designated hitter. And boy, what a bonus that is to have him.
That is a pretty great end to the story.
Yeah, well, the greater end to the story would be if he does something monumental.
Even if he doesn't, it's kind of cool that he's back in the action.
It's a Cinderella story, as Bill Murray would say.
Yes.
Cinderella story.
It is. It is. But he was, I mean, last year, the Cubs went through a little bit of, like this season, they had a little bit of a drought going, but Kyle Schwarber just was immune to that. He was just, when he hits the ball, it goes a long, long, long
you
way.
Remember, Wendy, the ball that was sitting on top of the scoreboard?
Yeah.
That was him. He provided that.
That's pretty cool.
He placed it.
Yeah. So welcome back to the Cubs.
And I just, you know, it really is exciting for the city. Bottom line, end of discussion.
It is.
But we do get a backseat. The White Sox get a backseat.
There's no question about it.
It's not fair. When I saw that first World Series in 71 years.
Yeah, that just sucks.
How does someone do that? How do you not know if you're a responsible journalist? I don't know who is responsible. How do you not know that that's inaccurate?
And haven't the Indians gone a long way since a World Series win?
Yeah, since a World Series. I made a
mistake
last year.
Are they like the second longest wait next to the Cubs?
I don't know for sure, but if they're not, they're
pretty
right
close.
Up there. Yeah, they'd pretty have
good
to be
series
right up there.
Here.
It's a dream matchup. I mean, a lot of people said this would have been more exciting against the Yankees or the Red Sox. Would it have been? The Cubs are in the World Series. I don't know how you make it more exciting.
Yeah, you can't.
I don't care if they're playing the Expos.
Right. The defunct Montreal Expos.
I will tune in a little tonight. It's my 19th anniversary. I guess Jim's happy anniversary too. We made it. You said we wouldn't make it.
I didn't think you'd make it that far.
Maybe we'll make it till 20. So Jim and I were going to go out and celebrate our anniversary, but our son Michael has a choir concert, so that's what we'll be doing. And after which, I'm going to tune into the Cubs game.
What do you think will be the mood of other parents there at the choir concert?
They will be having earbuds in and watching the game.
Right.
Or not going.
Right.
Michael was almost going to blow it off because it's like, oh, you and Dad were going to go out to dinner. I can miss my concert. I said, no, that's part of our anniversary is having children.
Right.
We'll go watch you.
Right. Interesting.
But, yeah, there are going to be a lot of parents not there.
With divided attention tonight?
Yeah, or not there. I mean, really, why?
I know.
And boy,
that's got to be a rough discussion with your child as you explain to him. I know that tonight's a big night for you, but Cubs are in the World Series for the first time in over 1,000 years, so I can't really be at your concert.
Well, there are some kids. I was talking to your lovely wife, Terry, at Kevin and Sarah's wedding, mm-hmm. and she was making fun of me because I go to all Michael's events.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, Michael asks us to.
Mm-hmm.
And Terry went on to say, well, you know, our kids are like, you don't have to come. And I said, well, then you're off the hook. If they say, would you come, would
then
you blow it off?
There's extra pressure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there are probably more parents that their kids don't need them to come, and they'll just it'll be Jim and I in the audience tonight.
Just gonna say,
maybe a couple of their Sox fans.
People who can't get World Series tickets, there are tickets still available for this concert.
Yep, LT High School, the Reber Center.
And it'd be a great night to go out for dinner, too, if you wanted to get a table somewhere.
You get a table
you know
anywhere.
What? Honestly, you're right, but can't do it.
I did that Saturday, actually, and I took advantage of that.
There were open seats at every restaurant Saturday night,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, we went to a sushi restaurant, sat down immediately. It was great.
Friends of mine, I have a couple friends that have restaurants, and they said, this goes on during the Blackhawks, run for the Stanley Cup every time, is that as excited as they are for the city and for the team, it really does take a chunk out of business, and you can understand that.
You look good in that cubby blue.
Oh, thank you.
But I've never seen you in a White Sox hat.
Not in 71 years.
You don't have a White Sox hat, do you?
I do have one, but it is ill-fitting.
Here's an idea. Get a new one, Mr. I Love Both Teams.
I probably should get a new one.
The chip comes out.
Shut up. Your birthday's coming up. I already got you a present, but maybe I'll add to it.
I should have one, but the one that I have is a vintage one that I love, but it just doesn't... It makes... You know I have a misshapen head. You know
Willy
that,
Lump
right?
Lump.
I do. So the hats that I wear have to compensate for that strange shape of my head. And I purchased this hat that I love. It's a White Sox.
Get it at the Rocky Dennis store? There's your movie.
Wow. Wow. An elephantitis joke this early in the morning. I did not see that coming. That was beautiful. Yeah, that's where I bought it.
Eric Stoltz played that.
Yeah, very,
very,
very
well.
Nice. I'm going to cry. That was so beautiful.
You're rubbing off on me, I think.
Wow. All right, so... No, I have nothing left to say now. That was ugly and beautiful at the same time.
Thank you, Bill. You've really taught me.
All right.
We have to take a break, and go Cubs. It'd be awesome. It's going to be very cold in Cleveland.
It's
in the 40s.
It's, yeah.
We got 50s.
It's a little brisk, but I think that's okay.
We got a text as we're talking Cubs playing for the World Series rights. 773 says it's not right that Schwarber gets to play and someone else was left off the postseason roster. Aren't the teams still limited to 25 players?
Yeah, they are limited to 25. So here's what happens. The player that did not make this round, because your team gets to adjust between rounds, okay? Rob Zestrizny is a left-handed pitcher. A name you may not be familiar with. He didn't pitch in that many games. He's a great pitcher, very effective pitcher, and he's got a good career ahead of him. But what a lot of teams do is when it goes to this round, a National League team, they'll drop a pitcher and add a position player because of the designated hitter. So it's not unusual for this to happen. It happens more times than not, and it's a good move. If you have a guy like Kyle Schwarber who is available, and he is, you got to run with it. It's a good move.
I hope he's ready because the pressure's on.
I feel the guy that I have felt the worst for not making the postseason roster is Jason Hamill, who was one of the Cubs' five starters all season long, had a great year, won 15 games. With any other team in baseball, he would have definitely been one of their pitchers. The Cubs are so rich in pitching, there was no room for him. But that's the guy that I feel really bad for because he deserved a place on the roster. There just wasn't one for him.
Lefty Mark Lester on the mound tonight.
John Lester. Mark Whatever. Lester played Oliver.
Okay. I was close.
That would have been a surprise.
Please, sir, may I have some more?
That would have been. Actually, against Los Angeles, that would have made more sense because he could have pitched to the Artful Dodger. So that would have been a much better move. But
that's
boy,
as close as I'm going to come. I knew it was Lester, and I knew he's left-handed.
That's all you need to know. No, it's John Lester, and he's been incredible. He's been unhittable in his three. He has had three postseason starts, and in every one of them, he has just made no mistakes. Now, we talked about him the other day. He's the guy who has this kind of mental glitch about throwing to first base. The Indians are a much faster team than the Dodgers are, and Francona, their manager, is I think, more of a strategist than the Dodgers manager is, Dave Roberts. So you may see more running on John Lester, which makes me nervous because he out and out refuses. It's been, I'm not exaggerating, a year and a half since he's made a throw over to first base to keep a runner close. So if you're the Indians and you're thinking, we're not going to score that many runs, if you get a guy on first base, you're going to do everything you can to get him over to second. You're going to make him steal. I don't know why other teams don't do it, but they don't.
That's just a weird little thing.
It's the craziest thing in the world. If that, and I, believe me, I'm not complaining. I love John Lester. He's had an amazing season. He's had a great career. But if you do something for a living, and in his case, it's pitch in the major leagues, one of the biggest aspects of that is just throwing to first base to keep a runner close, and he just doesn't do it. He just has a mental glitch about it. He doesn't want to do it, and he doesn't do it.
That just seems
it's the
like
craziest
really
thing in the
thing.
World. It'd be like, because you're in talk radio, if you said, this is my career, but I don't like to talk, but I'll be on talk radio. I'm just not a fan of actually verbalizing my thoughts. That would people go, I'm not sure that's the best career for you. But look at how it's paid off for him. He's amazing.
Or if you're in radio and you do everything really well, but you're never on time. Just like one part of it.
That's different.
Who was the second baseman? It wasn't Steve Sachs, was it, who couldn't throw the ball?
No, it wasn't Steve Sachs.
It was a twin, maybe.
Yeah. Who was it?
And he couldn't throw the ball to first base.
Right. But he could for years, and then all of a sudden he couldn't.
And there have been catchers from time to time who have a hard time throwing it back to the pitcher.
Right.
Such a mental...
Right.
It really is.
90% of the game is 50% mental or whatever.
Do you remember the Cardinals had a pitcher named Rich Ankiel, who was one of the best in baseball, and then all of a sudden something happened to him, and he couldn't throw a strike to save his life.
He became an outfielder.
Yeah, they turned him into an outfielder.
Was he an okay outfielder?
Yeah, he was a very good outfielder. But this was a guy who had no control problems at any point in his career, and then all of a sudden something happened. And I remember watching a game once where he walked four guys in it, not back to back to back to back. I think he got an out in the middle, but he could not throw a strike
anymore.
How
does that happen to someone?
I don't know. Isn't that crazy? I have no idea how that happened.
And he never went back to pitching?
No. The Cardinals said, because he was a very high-priced pitcher, and they didn't want to totally lose their investment, so they decided they'd convert him to an outfielder. And he was. He was a pretty good outfielder.
Someone texted Chuck Knobloch.
That's it. Yeah. Chuck Knobloch. That sounds like a slam you'd say to a guy.
No, it
nice
sounds
going,
like...
Knobloch. Nice throw, Knobloch.
It sounds like somebody you went to school with.
What a total Knobloch, that guy. Can't get the ball to first.
Is it John Lester?
John Lester.
Okay. Jack, you have a reason why John Lester does not like to throw to first base?
Yeah, I think he's smart to recognize that he does not do that well. If he tries, he's either going to throw the ball away or he's going to commit a balk, which gives him the automatic base.
But here's the thing. If you're so good...
Precision.
But he can throw it so well to home plate.
Right.
Why can't he make a similar throw to first base?
Moving your body to the left and being deceptive to whether you're going towards the plate or first base is a whole different thing.
It is easier to throw to third.
Yeah,
if you're but he's left-handed.
That's okay. He's got to move his body towards the plate to deceive the runner and move the upper part of his body to the left to go to first base. He just recognizes he doesn't do that well.
But Jack, you've seen it even on balls that are hit back to him. He still has that same, like, more times than not, he'll bounce it to first. It doesn't get there on a fly. He did that during the playoffs the other day.
Yeah, I think I saw one. I don't know if that's something that's a habit of his. I don't pay that much close attention. But the good thing here is that Lester doesn't allow too many people to get to first base.
No, he doesn't, does he? He's really good about that. He's so good.
Yeah.
Good luck tonight, Jack. We're hoping for the best.
Absolutely.
All right, take care.
Bye.
It's got to happen.
I think most people who have been following this team for as long as we've all been following them know that at some point, all that futility has to pay off. And I've never seen a team that's more poised for it than this team. There's not a single weakness on the team. There's no category they go, if they only had better this, then I think they'd do it. They're just solid all the way through.
But are you being too
hopeful? Kyle Schwarber.
Because, .
No.
And
I'm not being too
hopeful.
I'd like
to see a sweep and get in, get out.
As the White Sox did last time. Right?
Who? No one knows of that team.
Remember the White Sox?
Chicago hasn't won in how many years?
Oh, 59? Are you thinking 59?
No, more recently, Steve.
It's just not fair.
It's not.
It really isn't, and I'm done whining.
I don't think you're whining. I know what you're going through. When there's this much attention one way and not the other...
Right. No one thinks you're done whining, but you're right.
I mean, there's no way I don't want the Cubs to win, and I do mean that. It's just they've really earned it. This is a team that deserves to win the World Series.
If you were a Cubs fan and not a White Sox fan, I know you talked about the concert tonight. Would you still be going? If you were a Cubs fan, would you still be attending the concert?
Yeah,
or
my son wants me to. That's more important.
Wow, that's a lot.
I would sit my son down and explain what's important.
Yeah, but I mean, there's been times that there's been concerts with the Stanley Cup playoffs and such.
Yeah,
and
my daughter's 8th grade graduation was the first time they won it in this recent string, the Hawks.
So you had to go to the graduation, obviously.
Yeah.
That happened, I think it must have been the same day. I know there was something going on, I think from 8th grade graduation with Michael, and Jim would not talk to anybody. So afterwards, everybody was, you know, hey, congratulations. He put his hand over his ears and walked right to the car and wanted to get home to watch the DVR.
Right. And people are going, who's that knoblock?
Exactly.
What a total
knob. They were right, though. Happy anniversary, honey.
Happy anniversary, Jimmy.
You knoblock.
All right, let's take a quick break, and then there's more show. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
All right, it's Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder, and the Cubs going to try and win the World Series, and everybody's feeling pretty confident. Although you shouldn't. Don't they tell you not to?
Well, you have to at this point. I mean, I don't know how anybody couldn't be. I'm not saying be overly confident. The Indians are going to score a run or two, but we're looking forward to a good series, and it should end the right way.
And you're not bragging about it. If you're talking the way I feel, you're not like saying we're going to crush them, this, it's that. It's like, I just feel really good about it.
Right.
Well, I trust you too.
I think this is going to end
happy.
No,
I don't. What am I saying?
You don't trust us?
It's a best of seven series to win the Commissioner's Trophy. First pitch, 7:08 tonight, Progressive Field in Cleveland. And which team is unluckier? This is according to The Patch. The 2016 World Series marks the first time the two teams playing have not won a championship in 50-plus years.
Yeah.
To say the Cubs and the Indians have had their share of postseason misfortune is an understatement. If it wasn't for bad luck, these teams wouldn't have any luck at all when it comes to the playoffs and the World Series. But which team, the Cubs or the Indians, has had it worse in October? You want to look at some of their
disappointments?
I
already know it's got to be the Cubs. It has to be.
Well, Chicago, it's been 108 years since the Cubs have won the World Series, and the last time the team even played in the Fall Classic was 71 years ago in 1945. In fact, Chicago didn't play an inning of October baseball from 1945 to 1984.
It's quite a drought. But you know what's interesting is they keep saying, Joe Maddon keeps saying this, everybody connected with the team is, this team is so young that history just doesn't appeal to them. They don't care about that history. But the last couple of Cubs teams weren't around in the early 1900s either.
I think it's still in their head. I mean, it's not overpowering them, but they're definitely aware of it.
I don't think there's been little to no evidence. There's so many guys that come up and are so, you know, they're 22, 23, and 24 years old. Addison Russell, Wilson Contreras. They just have this reckless abandon. They go to the plate, and you don't see them being sheepish. They're
it's
swinging
like Little
hard
League to them.
Yeah,
with they a better paycheck.
They were just in Little League a couple of years
True.
Ago.
Cleveland, the last time the Indians won the World Series, 1948, nearly 70 years ago. Cleveland, however, has made it to the Fall Classic more recently, but the team lost to the Marlins in 97 and to the Braves in 95. The Indians also went through a postseason dry spell from 1954 to 1995.
It's a long time.
It is. Of course, the curses. Stupid Billy Goat.
We know the Billy Goat. We know that. We know the
black
man
cat
out in the outfield who almost caught a foul ball. We know that.
That's not even mentioned here.
Left that out.
Yeah, the second jinx was the curse of the black cat.
Oh, yes.
God, just make stuff up.
Right.
Cleveland, the curse of Rocky Colavito.
Yeah.
In 1960, the Indians traded slugger Rocky Colavito to the Detroit Tigers for Harvey Kuhn, a transaction that angered Cleveland fans. More importantly, that trade was used to explain the Indians' miserable decline from a competitive team to a team that couldn't finish within 11 games of first place. Did you know about this curse?
Yeah, I knew a little bit, but truthfully, our Lou Brock trade was a far worse, more cursed trade for a guy named Ernie Broglio. That didn't pay off for the Cubs at all, and Lou Brock was the best stolen base guy in baseball forever.
And here's something that I asked you off the air. How can Chief Wahoo still exist?
No.
And some fans recognize the curse of Chief Wahoo, blaming Cleveland's bad luck on the team adopting a racist Native American caricature as its mascot in 1947. Interestingly, the mascot was commissioned by then-owner Bill Veeck, a Chicago native and future owner of the Chicago White Sox.
How about that?
How can Chief Wahoo still...
I don't know.
Seriously. And I asked Dave Ennett, and Dave said it's not really their registered logo. It's not really on things. They changed the hat and everything.
But it's
still associated with them.
Right. To a certain group, that should be a very offensive. It'd be like if the Cubs logo was Robbie the Rabbi or something. You go, hey, wait a minute. That's kind of stereotypical. Are you sure you want to go with Robbie the Rabbi? Yeah, it's fine. It's fine.
And they do go on to blame Steve Bartman later in this Patch article.
You knew
which
that was
just
coming.
Leave him alone.
Right. You knew that was coming. Now, may I share with you what I consider to be the most outrageous bit of trivia about tonight's game? And it's not even trivia. Trivia doesn't even sell what this is. This is unbelievable. And I give high credit to Gordon Wittenmeyer of today's Chicago Sun-Times for pointing this out. This seems unfathomable, but it's real. Listen to this. Tonight, you know, Dexter Fowler is going to be the Cubs' leadoff man, right? He's been their leadoff man for the past couple seasons. He's one of the best in baseball. When Dexter Fowler comes to the plate tonight to lead off the game for your Chicago Cubs or our Chicago Cubs, although you have adopted them to some extent, he will be the first black player to play for the Cubs in a World Series.
What?
It's
well,
true.
Think of it.
It's
yeah.
true.
I mean, the color barrier.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Isn't that incredible? That never would have occurred to me if you gave me 100 years. I wouldn't have thought of that.
And he's
but
another
true.
And he's another great story, right? Came
yes,
back
he is.
To spring training.
He was going to be with the Orioles.
Gone. Yeah.
Yeah.
But wanted to be with his team.
I guess. We haven't won
in a long time.
So,
God. Since black players became a fixture in baseball, that's the last time the Cubs were in a World Series.
That is astounding to me.
Isn't that incredible? I mean, when you think about it, and I think this is a testament to how long it's been. I thought about this when I watched the movie about Jackie Robinson. You go, wow, that's 300 years ago, right? No, it's not that long ago at all.
That is a fascinating fact.
Yeah. So Dexter Fowler will be, again, according to Gordon Wittenmeyer, the first black player to play for the Cubs when he leads off for the Cubs against the Indians tonight. That seems, doesn't that, you go, well, that cannot be right. It is right.
Well, thank you for pointing yeah. that out.
No, thanks to Gordon Wittenmeyer.
All right, well, thank you, Gordon Wittenmeyer.
I'll go thank him. All right, let's take a quick break. It is Tech Tuesday, of course, so Bridget Carey from CNET will join us to tell us what's going on in the tech world. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Bill, it's a Tech Tuesday, and as per usual on Tuesday, we've got Bridget Carey on the line, senior editor from CNET and host of the CNET Update. Bridget, how are you?
Hey, doing good. Thanks for having me.
On Friday, when we were about ready to start our weekend, a massive cyber attack took out a bunch of websites, lots of them, and I was most upset because I couldn't post my picture of me and Dr. Ruth on my Twitter account. Mm. So we found out yesterday it involved cameras, security yeah. cameras.
Things in your own home.
Okay, explain this because I didn't explain it very well yesterday because we're not very tech savvy, especially Bill, but me included. But now is this stuff that can affect us in the future? What happened?
Okay, well, this is something that security researchers have long warned about, that a lot of the things that we're buying in our house that are internet-connected, like a security camera sometimes, not all of them are made securely in terms of having the password be something that is something you can set. It'll be like a default password, or it might be no password. Well, hackers got a hold of a bunch of cameras that didn't have any passwords on them, and they remotely put programs like a virus on them and set them and turned them basically into an army of computers to attack the infrastructure of different websites. And so people, without even knowing it, had webcams in their house that were essentially a robot army that was attacking the web. So normally you hear about this kind of stuff happening when people get a virus on their laptop or their PC. But now it's not just your computer at home, your main computer that can get this kind of infection, that can serve as a botnet. It's the other little items in your house. So eventually, you know, I guess now we have to worry about our internet-connected coffee makers becoming part of the future cyber war, you know?
They're going to start marching and attacking us.
Right. That's how it happens. There were two waves of this attack on Friday, Bridget. There was one in the morning on the East Coast and then a more general one later on in the afternoon. But in both cases, they were solved fairly quickly. Like if this happens in the future,
you know,
will this be?
I mean, it took like 2 hours on one and about, you know, a couple hours on another. So yeah. Fairly quickly, yeah. But still, this was affecting PayPal. And it wasn't even just the U.S. Some places in Australia were even affected and some banking sites. I mean, this was like a warning of how vulnerable we are and what could be the case in the future. If you can start taking out news sites, you can start taking out ways people can pay each other.
Yeah.
Will government start to be affected? This shows the potential of how much we rely on websites, you know, obviously to get, you know, our lives taken care of every day, but you'd hate to see it start to actually interrupt business that needs to happen. I mean, imagine going to the bank and going, oh, we can't help it. There's a cyber attack going on right now.
Right. Somebody texted in and said that they were at a medical office and couldn't help any of their patients that day because they couldn't access their records. That's big.
Right. And I think there's two things that are going to be happening in the future. I mean, like I said, it always takes something to happen before we will listen to the warnings of security experts. But I think companies like Twitter and Netflix and the others who were affected.
Credit Karma was affected, too.
Yeah, yeah. Everyone affected is going to have to not just rely on one company for their infrastructure, because that's what happened. They didn't just target individual websites. They took out the infrastructure that is used by many websites. It's a server, basically. So they overwhelmed the server that everyone used. And then I think companies are going to have to diversify. Like, so if one goes down, they have a backup. That costs more. That means if Netflix has to use multiple backups, they're going to be charging you more. If you look at the big picture here, you know, to be able to fight something like this, because we're seeing these attacks not just get stronger, but they're getting more sophisticated. And it's just a matter of time before, you know, it happens again and again and again. And then companies either have to choose to just be down or have backups in place.
Two questions for you. One, did they find out who was responsible for this?
It's too early to say. Some folks like to take credit, but you never can be sure. Really, one of the webcams we're talking like a massive amount of hits were being, you know, targeted on some of these servers. But what the most prominent was coming from a certain webcam maker, a Chinese brand. So those have been recalled. It's not a brand that you typically would buy here. But as far as the culprit, at least from the consumer side, just you personally can make sure that you're buying secure products, you know, and you change your passwords to make sure that they're not the default password or the default brand name password. That I think companies who make these internet-connected devices, like the webcam maker and such, I think that's also a wake-up call to them to be more secure when they give us products, because we don't want to have to think about that stuff.
But Bridget,
it's really bad for them.
The track record for finding people or groups that commit cyber crimes, cyber terrorism, is pretty good, right? More times than not, they do find the people responsible, don't they?
Well, sometimes there are clues. But the truth is, people can spoof where it's coming from. So for people to say, oh, this is Russia, you know, this is Russia attacking
us,
you can fake on the computer where your traffic is coming from. You can bounce it around to multiple countries. People usually think it's Russia or China because of some sort of virus, and the way the virus was written, maybe it has some code in Russian, and people go, okay, that's maybe how it's found. But you could fake that too if you wanted to frame them. Yes, on one hand, there are clues. On the other hand, people can fake anything now on the web. And so to say something is 100% certain, you just don't hear it often. Mm-hmm.
All right, we know Donald Trump wasn't responsible because he was lost without his Twitter being up for a couple of hours. My second question, is there any reason to believe this was a practice attack for cyber wars?
The election, perhaps?
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah. That's what people are contemplating. Like, was this just a, you know, to show what they could do for next time, to see what else they could do? I'm sure it's too hard to be able to protect against this happening again by November 8th, you know, because it takes time for companies to kind of beef up the way that they're going to stop something like this. So, yeah, it certainly could happen again, and it could be a distraction for people. Also, we've seen this also as an attack on a singular website. A popular security researcher, Brian Krebs, had the largest version of this on attacking just his website as a form of censorship. So, you know, he was writing about someone who, and they weren't happy with what he was writing about, and they wanted to shut down his website, and sure enough, that's one way to do it. So whether or not it's widespread or on a single target, that, you know, that could certainly happen anytime.
But Bridget, this kind of answers the question that so many have asked over the last couple of years. With technology being what it is, why can't the election just be held online? We wouldn't have to go to polling places. We could just vote online. This shows why, doesn't it?
Right. The web wasn't built inherently to be this secure. So we're kind of adding security as an afterthought now, essentially, the way we're buying products in our home, you know, by connecting them to apps, and so I can, you know, set this to turn on when I have an app, or set that to turn on when I have an app. It kind of all, you know, rushed to the market, and people didn't really think about the making it super secure right away, because guess what, that costs money, you know, and they want to make profit. Yeah, this shows that we're going to be kind of backtracking and trying to make things more secure as an afterthought, unfortunately.
Pretty scary. And be careful what you put on the internet. Bill, take down your naked pictures.
Nope, too late.
Bridget Carey, she is host of the CNET Update. Before we let you go, why don't you promote what's coming up on the CNET Update for today at CNET.com?
Well, we are looking at a phone that has everyone buzzing in the tech world. You and I won't care to buy it. It's from a Chinese company called Xiaomi, but it looks like it beat Apple to the punch in what everyone thought the next iPhone was going to look like. It has the front is almost entirely screen. There's no frame except a very tiny bit in the bottom corner. So like to be able to plug it in, you know. So I think everyone's kind of looking at this as the future of smartphones.
Good to know. Go to CNET.com and you can find her. She's Bridget Carey. Thank you so much, and stay safe in the cyber world.
Yeah, stay safe in the upcoming cyber war.
Thanks, Bridget. We'll take a quick break. Steve has the news, and then we have a lot more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
We can really be friends, but when it comes to a couple of things, it separates our friendship. Religion is one of them,
mm-hmm.
and most recently, politics.
Mm-hmm.
In the studio with us right now, Dr. Suzanne Deggs-White, a professor from Northern Illinois University, NIU. You're also, what are you a professor of?
I'm a professor of counselor education, and so my special areas of research are the human relationship in its many forms.
Have you ever seen anything like what we're experiencing now, in that the country is so divided politically, and there used to be a time where if you had differences with somebody politically, you could discuss them. Those days is gone.
Those days are gone. Indeed, they are. No, there's never been such a divisive election, because I think today with social media, the diversity of people that get involved, the people that have a voice that once did not have that voice, the minority are able to be more vocal. And so the things we've always wanted to talk about but didn't have a place, now there's a public platform that allows us all to kind of jump on there and push each other around on the stage.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of a good thing that we have a voice. I mean, being in radio, we were lucky because we had a voice. We had the microphone right in front of us.
Right.
Most people didn't. So I kind of like the fact that Facebook gives people an opportunity to voice their opinion, but it gets so mean and ugly. It's you don't mind your manners a lot of the time.
No. Yeah, Facebook and all the social media that are out there allow anonymity. You know, we're a voice. We're this image we present, but we don't have to show up and be that person that's projecting all this hate or this vitriol online. So we can hide behind the anonymity of social media platforms.
How much of it, Suzanne, do you think the fact is that if you watch the candidates, anytime they're in a room together, they're not being very kind to each other. Right. So the supporters are like, well, if they're not being nice to each other, why should we be nice to each other?
You know, this speaks to a larger problem. I think civility is really disappearing in our country. I think there's a sense that I've been quiet too long. I want to have my say. Mm. And when we get wrapped up in our own beliefs, we forget about the damage we may be doing to other people's feelings, to other people's belief systems, or as models for young kids, as was mentioned at the recent debate.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, what happened to the saying, you know, walk in someone else's shoes. Right. I'm paraphrasing because I don't remember the exact quote. Yeah,
Tom McCann said that, remember?
Yeah.
Great Tom McCann.
But I mean, you really, in order to have a conversation where you're not screaming at someone, you have to sit there and listen to their point of view and go, Right. Okay, well, maybe Obamacare is terrible for you, but it's good for me. Here's why. And you have a discussion. You have to put yourself in someone else's shoes.
You do. You have to empathize with someone else's perspective. And I think what happens with politics, we get wrapped up in our candidate is right on all things, that we forget that not anyone in this world is right on all things. And we wrap ourselves up in what they're selling. And that's where we get in trouble, because we're buying something we don't even know what it is, because we like this candidate. We don't think, we feel.
But it turns into like your favorite team is going to win. And, you know, Hillary's a liar. That's what we hear. Mm-hmm. And Trump doesn't like women, but Hillary's a liar. I mean, they're both liars.
They both are liars. And they both have done things that neither one is probably proud of, and things that the American public rejects as what leaders should do. But the fact is that there's talking to our emotions, and we kind of lose sight of what the reasons are that we like this person, because we identify. And it is like, you know, kind of sports, the athletics piece. You know, if I'm a rabid Cleveland fan, I don't want to hear anything about your dear little Cubs. They are not lovable losers. They're losers. Whereas if I'm a Cubs fan, you know, this is our time. We've waited till next year, and we don't care about the stats or the RBIs or the errors. We care about, this is my team out there on the mound.
Right.
All right. So how can we fix this? How can we have a discussion with someone who does not see eye to eye with you and still communicate and remain friends on Facebook?
Well, you know, that's the thing, the Facebook thing. One thing we have to do with people, one, we can ignore what they're saying. You know, we have to recognize this friendship is more valuable to me than being right. And that's hard for most of us to do. When it comes to most friendships, we're much more patient with differences of opinion than we are with our spouses or with our kids or with our mothers or our mothers-in-law. But with friends, usually we give them room to kind of, you know, we kind of laugh at their foibles, laugh at their weak spots along with them. But when it comes to politics, what we see is so offensive to us and our beliefs when they don't believe what we believe. We've got to step away from that and think, is this worth risking a friendship by bashing this candidate who they feel so strongly about? That's one thing, you kind of step back and say, is a friendship worth this?
Bill and I were talking about this off the air, and there are people that might be related to me and might not be, who I know we see completely differently, so I don't even bring it up.
Right,
I don't even
want
to go there.
No. And that's a good thing to do. You know, if you can't maintain your own sense of level-headedness and you can't accept someone has a different opinion, don't go there. Why walk into a problem if you can avoid it?
Should that be verbalized? Should you make an agreement with friends or family? Hey, we're going out to dinner Saturday night. How about this? No discussion of politics. Do you say that right out loud?
Lot of things. You know, there are a lot of things. I'm working on a book about sibling relationships, and we talk about the taboo four, you know, politics, religion, sex, and money. We just don't talk about these things in polite company. And sometimes we have to say, hey, you know, this no politic discussion. Let's have a fun time. Let's put that to the side. I think a lot of us believe we have more power in the outcome of an election than we really do. And so kind of turning off that need to prove a point is something hard for some of us to do. We want to be involved in these conversations, but making ground rules is sometimes the very best thing you can do.
You know what's interesting about what you call the taboo four? Go through them again. It's sex, it's politics, it's religion, and it's money.
Right.
Those are four topics that you could discuss all night long if you want to, and you almost can never change anyone's mind about any of those four.
You cannot change their mind. And if you think about what politicians are, what their platforms are, it's about those four topics. It's about money and income. It's about politics. It's about religion. Who is okay to have in the country, who is not. And it's about sex, who can do what where.
Yeah.
And you can't change minds. You can't convince me not to be a Cubs fan because you tell me that they have more, you know, they've lost more games than any other team. We think with our hearts when it comes to our belief systems, and getting someone to change their feelings, you have to appeal to their emotions to change their mind.
Yep.
Because these things are deeper than just, oh, this is a logical conclusion. So you're correct. Absolutely correct.
There are a lot of taglines that I'm hearing lately, like to your point. I hear that all the time. People say that to your point, Bill. Yeah. But there's one that has gone away. We'll have to agree to disagree.
Right.
What happened to that?
What happened to it? You know, that's an important thing. We must agree to disagree. It's as if agreeing to disagree, you're a loser now. And I think that our world is so hung up on winners and losers that we can't accept. Yeah, there was a tie on Monday Night Football, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, I'm going, wow, they still let people have ties. This is amazing, because I thought we had to do something so there had to be a winner, because this whole culture is about having a winner and a loser. And for some people, compromising is losing. I counseled a couple once, and I said, can you work together for a compromise? And the guy said, yeah, that would be kind of a win-win. And his wife said, no, it would not. It would be a lose-lose. We'd both lose something if we compromise. And as a counselor, I really was kind of speechless. I had to really sit and think about that and digest what she had said, because her perspective was, if I don't get my way, I'm a loser.
But doesn't that show that that's a couple that probably shouldn't be together?
Yes.
If they're looking at the same thing that differently?
That differently. And and that's kind of a basic human belief that, you know, compromise is a, most of us are raised, compromise is a good thing.
Yeah.
But if I'm looking at you getting any part of your way, well, you know, then I'm a loser.
Hmm.
And that's not going to, that relationship is not going to survive or thrive. And they weren't. They were in divorce. It turned into divorce counseling.
Sure, of course.
Because they both refused. Well, he was working hard. She refused. She dug her heels in. She was going to vote for that candidate, metaphorically speaking, and, you know, she wanted to be the victor.
We all compromise every day. Every day, if you decide to let someone in when you're merging.
Right.
I mean, we all, it doesn't mean you're a loser. It means you're a nice person.
And
hey, go ahead.
And nice people are no longer, it's not valued. And I think if we look at the candidates right now and we look at the debates and the things that are being said are comments that never should be on a public stage.
Right. Neither are being nice.
Yeah, there's not niceness. And there's insults. I mean, the lying, the nasty one, I mean, all these comments that we hear that before, if a child said that about someone, his mom would have, you know, done something really quickly and said, don't talk that way.
Right.
So I think that it's about civility and recognizing, I think we need to go back to the value of friendship and relationship, which is something that seems to have suffered in the past. As social media has taken off, social skills have decreased. I think there's a direct inverse proportion.
Before we take a quick break, I just want to read this text, which explains it all. Listen to this. It's always been the rule not to discuss religion and politics. This is not new. The problem is most people are degenerate morons nowadays and can no longer have a normal conversation without turning nasty. Social media is dragging us down quickly. Stay off of it. But right there in that comment,
yes,
that's it. Because
that's
someone thinks differently, you're a degenerative moron.
Right. That's it. That's what happens. You cannot tolerate. You know, I'm a wonderful, accepting person. I'm very tolerant of others as long as they don't disagree with my beliefs. You know, I'm not tolerant of the intolerant. it limits there.
That's Dr. Suzanne Deggs-White. Again, we're talking about 7 ways to talk politics without losing a friend. If you'd like to jump in, 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
We are chatting with Dr. Suzanne Deggs-White, professor and chair, Department of Counseling, Adult and Higher Education at Northern Illinois University. And we talked to you a couple months ago about toxic friendship.
Yes.
I guess this could also apply if you're trying to find ways to talk politics without losing a friend. Bottom line is, you're not going to change anyone's mind, but you can still have a discussion, can't you?
Right. You cannot change someone's mind unless they're really willing to sit and listen to you, or else they really want to be good friends with you and want to get on your train. A lot of times, politicians appeal to our hearts and not our heads, and they share their dreams and make them believe that they are also our dreams. And I think that's, we get caught up in someone else's dream, and it's hard for us to get off that train unless either, one, there's a really strong, convincing reason, like the election results are in, or to a friend is really helping us to feel the passion they feel for the other candidate.
All right, let's go to exactly what you just said. In 2 weeks, we're going to know who won this election.
Absolutely.
So, of course, when your candidate wins, you don't want to gloat, but how do you mend any fences once there's been some damage?
You know, it's interesting. Can you accept the results of this election if your candidate loses, you personally? And, you know, friends sometimes have a hard time, and you kind of got to understand what happened when the Cubs lost the last playoff game in the past years, you know, you feel really bad. So good friends are going to understand and empathize what it's like to be on the losing team. And they're going to give you some time to heal. And if it's a family member, you kind of, you know, do what you can to rouse them up. And then you just move forward because, you know, the election's going to come. We think there's going to be change. There's not going to be a world of difference and life is going to go on. Right. And so, you know, acknowledging that your friend is probably ticked off, upset, heartbroken, whatever it may be, and just, you know, letting them be where they're at and not trying to, you know, boost them up when they really are upset.
847 has said, you are entitled to your opinion, even if it's wrong. But who's to say it's wrong? See, I have a problem when you're talking to someone. I don't care who's right or wrong. Right. If we have a problem, I just want the problem solved.
Yeah.
Is it important to always be right?
No, it's not important to always be right. We can't always be right in life. There are times where we think we're in the right, but we may be totally in left field. And there are times when we want to tell our friends what's right or wrong. And we have to, and it's that part of the empathy and understanding. We all have different life experiences. Those all come together in every heated, exciting argument or every heated battle or competition. And winners and losers, it's not about right or wrong. It's about being in that moment and recognizing you can't control outcomes.
But Suzanne, don't you think for a lot of us, if we think we know somebody well, a family member or a friend, and you go, how can we agree on 95% of the stuff in the universe, but when it comes down to politics, we're so diametrically opposed? Right. That's troublesome to us.
Well, it's also exciting, isn't it? To think, what are the mysteries of this person? What is their view? What is their perspective? Wow, how do you know, kind of like scratch your head. How do I make sense of someone from such a different place and their views?
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes you just say, well, you know, that's who they are. We put up with a lot in friends, and different political beliefs, I think, have to be one of them because we're not going to change them. And, you know, I know you're right, Wendy. Bill, I know you're right in your beliefs. I would never doubt that because for you, they are the right beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
For me, maybe not so much. Don't know what the belief is. Don't know. But recognizing that everyone is a product of their life experience, being okay with people not always being on the same page. And if you're able to agree to disagree and just enjoy each other's company, forget the politics, the religion, the sex, all the other parts, and really focus on, you know, what brings you together as friends.
Right.
And it also comes down to, if you can state to me, here's why I like this candidate. This person's policy is going to help me in this way.
Right.
This reason is going to help me. So that's my story on this.
Right.
So agree to disagree.
Yeah, agree.
Talk about the actual issues on how it's going to change your life for that candidate, not she's a liar, he's
right.
A toad.
He's whatever he may be. Yeah. You have to stick to the issues, really. And you have to have logical, emotionless, not emotionless, but you have to have discussions that the emotions come from excitement about what the facts are and not what you imagine. It's kind of like the Wizard of Oz, where, you know, that we really believe there was a Wizard of Oz, but there was nothing but, you know, an old inventor behind a curtain.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what politicians are. They have the spin. They have this image. But if you want to keep your friendships and have discussions about issues, that's exciting. I mean, we should have public discourse. We should have civil public discourse and talk about what's going on in the world that affects us, but we shouldn't use that as an excuse to bash a friend, because when you bash a friend or bash your friend's candidates, you're bashing your friend's heart.
Yeah.
That's
and
true.
You got to be aware because, yeah, you know, we respond on an emotional level. If you read vitriol from someone on Facebook, you feel it. You know, these things don't happen just in our head. So, you know, talk to me about issues. Talk to me about making the world a better place, but don't tell me, you know, why you think this person is going to be the answer to everything.
Her name is Dr. Suzanne Deggs White. You can find her teaching as she's a professor in Department of Counseling at Northern Illinois University in good old DeKalb, Illinois. You have a book that's going to be coming out soon about sibling rivalry.
Yes. Uh-huh. Adult sibling relationships, how to navigate difficult conversations.
Check out her blog. Where do we find that?
On psychologytoday.com.
And will you come back and see us when that book comes out about sibling relationships?
Thank you very much. That'd be a delight.
Bring one for me, but not for my brother, okay?
But not for you.
Thanks, Suzanne.
Oh, thank you for having me this morning.
A quick break. Kim with the news and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Thank you, Kim. Hi, everybody. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy. Part one of our Tuesday show. We're at 312-981-7200 if you want to jump in. Wendy, I think you will admire Anna Wurzberger.
Why?
Every once in a while, I come across a story, and then the subject of the story, I say to myself, I think that person and Wendy would be very good, close, fast friends if they met. Anna Wurzberger is in the news today because she is suing Kentucky Fried Chicken.
My goodness, why?
Because she went there and ordered a meal, and then when she was done, she was still hungry, And so she is filing a lawsuit against KFC for $20 million.
Okay, A, that's not their fault. She should have gotten a bigger dinner or bucket.
Agreed.
Two, that's $20 million?
$20 million. That's the, if you don't feed Anna Wurzburger, you pay the piper. A New York woman says she spent $20 for a bucket of chicken last summer and was then disappointed when the meal fell short of what was advertised. I came home and said, where is the chicken?
No, it's supposed to be, where's the beef?
Where's the beef? Yeah, that's the way it's supposed to read. This is Anna Wurzburger telling the New York Post, where's the chicken? I thought I was going to have a couple of meals for her $20. She claimed that the fast food giant's advertising shows a bucket that is overflowing with chicken, according again to the New York Post.
It's advertising. When does your burger or your other item look like the picture they advertise?
Rarely, if ever.
Yeah.
Rarely, if ever.
That is crazy.
Do you ever see, if you see an ad for almost any breakfast cereal, they always show you like the most delicious part of the cereal in abundance. Like sometimes they'll show you fresh fruit, like as though you pour the cereal out of the box and there's strawberries and raspberries in the cereal.
But then you look and the real small print and it says fruit served extra.
Yeah, yeah. Or if the cereal has some kind of bonus, like, you know, you could get Captain Crunch with, you know, various kinds of
the
things.
The Crunch Berries.
Yeah, the Crunch Berries. And then on the box or in a commercial, you go, I couldn't eat that many Crunch Berries. That's a lot of Crunch Berries. But then when you pour it, you go, three Crunch Berries? That's not enough.
That's because your brother or sister took all the Crunch Berries out.
I know.
And that's advertising, too, where, remember, we've heard the story from years ago where you're taking a picture for cereal on the box, and they use Elmer's glue to make the milk look perfect.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's supposed to look pretty. If it says 20 pieces and she got 10 pieces, then yeah, I would sue
them
for $20 million.
Right.
But, you know, just because it wasn't overflowing.
I love the fact that in her mind, in Anna Wurzburger's mind, this miscarriage of justice is worth exactly $20 million. You don't tell me to come in and have a meal of chicken and not give me enough chicken. You owe me $20 million.
What has happened to society?
I don't know. Wurzburger complained to the company, that's KFC, a Yum brand, I might point out. But said that she was told that the reason why all the bucket was overflowing with chicken on the ads was to give the opportunity for the public to see the product. So I get that.
To show the chicken.
Right. If you're seeing the commercial and you only see the bucket, you say to yourself, I'm curious as to what the chicken looks like. So they make it overflow so you can see what the chicken looks like. She thinks that it's foul play.
Oh, I get it.
That's good.
Good writer.
So she hired a lawyer demanding that the company change its advertising. The company did send the 64-year-old grandmother two gift certificates as an apology. That'll make things
and
right.
And the $20 million?
She wants $20 million, so they give her two $5 vouchers for more chicken. Okay, I'm okay with it now.
Well, her original thought was she could get two meals out of it, so with the voucher, she could get the second meal.
Right, and then that it balances out.
Shame on her.
She returned the two gift certificates and then instead said, I want $20 million in damages.
Good luck with that, honey.
Why so much, you might ask? Yes.
Why so much, Bill?
We're asking that. It's a principle of the matter, Wurzburger told the local CBS affiliate in New York. Sometimes you got to hit people where they feel it. The company says that the lawsuit is meritless. The colonel himself
has rolled over in his grave.
Right. What's that spinning sound we hear from Colonel Sanders' grave? So, I'm not sure.
She has no leg to stand on. Get it?
But we'll keep you abreast of the story.
Bill.
I can understand her disappointment. I can understand because we've all been in a situation where you see something, some product, and you go, I bet that stuff, based on what I'm seeing in this print ad, in this commercial, it's got to be the best. And then you get it. Think about it. Haven't you ever been to any restaurant where right there on the sign, on the menu, when you're ordering, you look up at the board and you go, that looks flawless. Look at how delicious that looks. And then they hand it to you and you go, well, that doesn't look at all like what that looks like on the sign. Not even a little bit.
Yeah, but if the real version, the crappy looking version was on the menu board, who would get it?
I know.
Listen, I got to tell you, one of my favorite fast food burgers is the Culver's Butter Burger.
That's good stuff.
It really is good, yeah. Especially if you've had a few too many drinks the night before. Really handles it perfectly. Oh. But they have this new thing where I'm mad at them because it's so good. They have the fried cheese curds at Culver's.
Sure, I know those.
You get a family size because you have four people. And the first time we got the family size, it was a very family size amount. And then on various trips to Culver's after that, it's not so much.
What happened?
I don't know. Maybe it's a smaller family. But you feed us cheese curds and we get bigger.
So they look at your family when ordering and they decide how much you deserve?
They were a little scant on their second order that we got a month or so later. And I said something to them. I said, the family size has gotten smaller, and they maybe put a few extra in at that time. But that has to be like, you know, at least with chicken, if you know you're getting 10 pieces. Come on, tell me I'm not the only one who gets home and count them.
Sure. Right.
But the cheese curds, you should know how many approximately you're going to get.
It shouldn't vary by much.
It varies. And I don't.
By a lot, by that much, though. It
kind
shouldn't.
Because I have to do some road curds, you know, and then, of course, there's a smaller amount when I get home.
Yeah, right. You have a couple on the way.
Right.
That's your payoff for picking up the food.
Really? Whoever goes gets the road fries or the road curds. It does.
Have you ever come home and eaten the entire order of fries? I've done that twice where someone in my family go, we ordered fries.
Yeah.
And I'll go, I don't know what happened with the fries.
It's happened.
They only put one in the bag, one French fry.
The worst, which I think is unforgivable from my husband, there have been numerous times that he'll go pick up a pizza, and when I open it, there's a piece missing.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm like on the phone with them, ready to call them. And he goes, oh, no. You broke the seal on the hot pizza box?
That's a lot.
That's unacceptable.
When you reach into a bag, if there's fries or
loose fries,
then you're entitled, but you don't break the seal.
I know.
That's incredible.
Seal.
All right, we have more to discuss with you. If you'd like to jump in, we would love to hear from you. Our phone number and text line is 312-981-7200. Your thoughts on this? It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Bill was informing us about a frivolous lawsuit that
Anna Wurzberger.
Well, caller Ann wants to jump in on this. It is pathetic, isn't it?
It is. It's just amazing to me. I think it speaks of the legal system. I'm not quite sure how to say this, but that any attorney would actually take on this lawsuit is
right.
Just amazing to me.
That's true.
You know, the fact that she's suing for $20 million over, you know, her perceived lack of chicken in her chicken bucket is one thing. But the attorney, for heaven's sake.
It's going to get thrown out immediately, Ann. Don't you worry.
Well, I hope so. But the fact that money is being spent on this it is just appalling to me. No wonder, you know, the price of everything that we pay for keeps going up.
When sure.
We have things like this that going on.
Sure.
Anyway.
And thank you. Have a great week.
Thank you. Somebody says when this suit is thrown out, we can all breathe a sigh of relief. I was telling you off the air, there was a pizza place. We were having a family party. I ordered 4 16-inch pizzas. My brother was in from Peoria. They don't have good pizza there. I thought, we'll get extra. He can bring some home.
Right.
When the pizzas arrived, 4 16-inch pizzas, I opened the box, and some looked smaller than the others.
Yeah.
So I got out the tape measure. And I measured the diameter.
Why not?
One was 16, one was 15, one was 14, and one was like 13. So I called the guy and said, I'm really disappointed here. We really like your pizza. What are you going to do about it? He goes, what do you want me to do about it?
So fix it.
I don't know. Send another pizza to make up for the missing inches there. He was just such a jerk. So we have never gone back there.
No, that's the best way to play it. Is
ever.
To just not go back. All right. Listen to this story, and I can tell you the name of this restaurant because they just closed down less than a year ago. There was a restaurant in Evanston, Davis Street Fish Market. Loved it. Used to go there all the time. They had this appetizer that was firecracker shrimp. You got 10 shrimp. It was an appetizer. It was not only was it great, but you got a lot of shrimp, and it tastes good. So we'd always get that as an appetizer. So one time we go in there, and we order it, and instead of the usual 10, we got 4. So I said
same
to the waiter.
Same price?
Yeah, same exact price. So I said, we ordered a full order of the firecracker shrimp, but they brought us a 40% order, not even a half order. It's only, we usually get 10, we get 4. So he looks at it and he nods. He goes, yeah, He goes, we've changed the order a little bit. You'll notice the shrimp are a little bigger than usual. I go, I didn't notice that. I just noticed that there's always 10, and this time there's 4. So he pauses, and he goes, you're actually getting more. And I go, I don't think so, because I know that 10 is greater than 4. And I did that thing, that arrow that you learn in school for greater than and less than. I go, 10 is greater than 4. And we got 4, so it's not more, it's less. And he goes, no, they're bigger shrimp. And they're not, they're the same. So I go, can I talk to the manager about this? And the manager comes over and I explain to him. And he went with the same thing. He goes, well, we switched the order around. We're going with a different shrimp supplier. They're larger shrimp. I go, there's no way in the world there's more shrimp here than usual.
Then get 5. I mean, there's no rhyme
or
reason.
When you're used to 10 and you get less than half, you're going to be a little bit upset about it. So back and forth. And I said, all right, let's go with that. I get more. Thank you. You're right. And I just said to my wife, I said, we can't. I'm not great at math, but I know what's more and what's less. And then they closed. I don't think because of that. I'm sure there were other contributing factors.
Yeah, that's not good. Someone is reminding us one of the best movies that I love with Michael Douglas falling down.
Yeah.
He goes nuts with a machine gun after being given a sandwich that didn't look like the picture. I remember that scene vividly.
And we don't advocate that sort of behavior.
No.
Ever, but
I advocate the movie.
It's a pretty funny scene.
Because we've all been there.
Right.
Roseanne, I have a case of the missing cheese curds.
Hi. I was just thinking, I have a restaurant, and I know how some of this goes. Cheese curds aren't always the same size. Some are bigger, some are smaller, and they're weighed instead of measured by amount. So
you're
sometimes
right.
your order is going to be bigger or smaller according to the size of the curd, and that's probably what happened with your family size curd.
It did seem like there were much more in the family portion before.
Much more, not even just a little bit.
Honestly,
more, much more.
So I will. There were some really tiny ones in this last one. It was a bigger order, so maybe that does work out like that.
Well, you know what? I would say something. I would think you should talk to me, because you know a lot of this stuff is weighed by employees, and then Culver's has a tendency to hire kids.
Yeah,
you know?
They do. And they have so much fun working there.
Do they?
Yeah. They really do. Yeah. I love my Culver's.
Roseanne, you know this. You have a restaurant. If customers aren't happy, you want to know about it because you want them to come back.
So
right?
You'll make it right.
Exactly. That's why I think you should say something every time you go in when you feel like you're getting gypped, although not $20 million worth.
Do that.
You know? I want $20 million worth of cheese curds.
Yeah, do
then
that.
Then I will shut up.
But you know what else we have to remember? We have to remember about that lady from McDonald's who had the big lawsuit because she spilled hot coffee on herself and blamed McDonald's.
Right.
Remember? That I never thought was going to be taken on, and it got taken on, and she won.
And now there's a warning on there, coffee may be hot. Well, I don't know that the warning was there before, but duh, it's hot coffee.
Yeah, who decides to go to McDonald's and order cold coffee, you know? I mean, you go there for hot coffee. I don't get it. Like you said, what's happened to this world? It's sad.
It's sad. It is sad. Thank you. We appreciate it, Roseanne. Take care.
You're welcome.
All right, and real quick. All right, what's the problem, Ted?
Oh, it's not a problem. It was just as you were telling the story, it kind of sounded like a version of like a bad children's book, like, you know, Goldilocks and the Three Bears. You know, this one's not big enough. This one's even worse, you know, kind of AKA Bad Santa sort of thing.
I guess you're right. But, you know, when you get pizza, everybody eats more than they say they're going to eat.
Always.
So I like to get, you know, I'm half Italian. I like to make sure you have too much.
Yeah.
So when you get 4 16-inch pizzas and only one is 16 inches in diameter, I say that's bad.
No, I totally agree with you. I just think it was maybe the store's way of going, hey, if it's a problem, you just order another one. You know.
That's true, but he should have sent one. Thank you, Ted. I appreciate it.
Remember the thing with Subway 3 or 4 years ago where people measured, they're called footlong subs, and people measured them and they were coming out to be 11 inches. And then they go, well, wait a minute. It says on the sign, footlong subs, 11 inches does not equal a foot.
I agree with that one. It's a footlong.
Well, their argument was the bread started out 12 inches, but then we cooked it and it contracted. So
then it shouldn't be called a footlong.
It's like a quarter pounder.
Yeah, the same thing with the quarter pounder. Right.
I've not weighed one, but I'm going to later.
Wendy just walks around with a food scale everywhere she goes. Let me see that sandwich.
Somebody did it at Starbucks, too, with drinks.
Yeah.
They said they weren't full enough.
Because of the
putting
ice.
Putting in too much ice, exactly.
Yeah, right.
I guess we just want what we want, so we should make our own stuff.
Right.
That'll solve the
or
problem.
Or else, we want $20 million
That's
to
right.
make it right.
We'll and take crisp, fresh bills.
Fresh bills.
With some cheese curds on the side.
All right, a break, and then we'll talk to Steve and find out what's on the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Thanks, Kim. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. It's part two of our Tuesday show. We're accessible, you know, 312-981-7200. Call us or text us. We would love to hear from you.
I've been accessible my whole life.
But now even more so, thanks to technology. Kim just mentioned in the news that the number one selling Cub jersey is not the person that I thought it would have been. It's Javi Baez. And is that a new development, Kim, do we know? Or that isn't all season long, right?
No, I think it's been all season long.
Really?
Yeah. He's the number one.
That?
Who would you have thought, Bill?
I would have thought it would have been Anthony Rizzo and then Chris Bryant, who, as Kim mentioned, are a close second and third, right?
Yeah.
I can see them selling a lot of jerseys.
They're the top three, Baez, Bryant, and Rizzo.
Yeah. Now, earlier in the show, we talked about this. There was a mention in the Sun-Times that when Dexter Fowler bats tonight in the leadoff spot, he will be the first African-American Cub in a World Series, which we all went, wait, that can't be. But Jackie Robinson broke the color barrier 2 years after the Cubs were last in the World Series. So, yeah, that is true. Dexter Fowler, when he bats tonight, will be the first black member of the Cubs to play in a World Series. It seems like that's impossible, but it's not.
It does seem like that.
So then Steve Bertrand was saying to us that he got a call or a text, I don't remember which he said, saying that they believe that Javi Baez...
I told you this.
Oh, did you say this?
Yes.
I can't tell you and Steve apart. You're like the same to me.
Same height.
That Javi Baez may be the first Hispanic player to play for the Cubs in a World Series. Is that? I don't know if that's true or not.
We were going to look that up before we brought it up on the air. Remember that part?
Yeah, there was a lot going on.
Steve Bertrand said he would look it up.
We'll figure out whether or not that's true. But here's what I have found, Wendy. I have found things. This is from the staff over at the Chicago Tribune, a fine newspaper, I might add. These are things that they say that every Cubs fan should know. These are common things, some of them more common than others, that if you're a fan of the Chicago Cubs, you should probably know. Steve Bertrand has joined us in the WGN newsroom. Steve, if you know some of these, please, by all means, just shout out the answers. What was the original name of the ballpark that we now know and love as Wrigley Field? It wasn't always called Wrigley Field. What did it used to be called? Do you know?
I'm probably not going to know any of these.
I knew this
like
one.
Wigan Park or
yeah.
Wigan?
Wigman,
Chief Wiggum?
Named for Chief Wiggum of Springfield.
Got any donuts? That's the worst
That's
Chief
pretty
Wiggum
good.
Ever.
That's pretty good. It was called Wigman Park when it was originally built in 1914. The park was named after Charlie Wigman, who built it for his team, who were then known as the Chicago Federals.
If you build it.
They will come, event, and they did. They did. It did not have the electronic scoreboard, though, in 1914. Did you know that, Wendy?
Oh.
That's a new addition. How many parks have the Cubs called home prior to Wrigley Field?
Two.
Can you name either of them?
That one
and the other one.
That one.
Yep, you got them both right. Actually, it is six.
Did they play at Soldier Field?
Here's the order that they run them in. The 23rd Street grounds on 23rd and State Street. That's from 1876 to 1877. Then the Lakefront Park south of Randolph. Between Michigan and Illinois Central Railroad tracks, also in the early 1800s, West Side Park at Congress. Now, the Bears played at Wrigley, but I don't think the Cubs ever played at Soldier Field. That didn't happen, right?
I don't know. I was asking you as a question.
West Side Park of Congress and Throop, South Side Park at 35th and Wentworth, West Side Grounds at Polk and Walcott, and then, of course, Wrigley Field. I know you'll know this one.
Really?
Who planted the ivy on the outfield wall at Wrigley Field?
I don't know.
You
Come
should
on,
know this.
Wendy.
You know this. You do know this.
Tony Fulmer.
From the Chalet.
Yep.
Think Chief horticulturist.
Think of your baseball heritage.
My grandfather?
He's far. It's not your grandfather.
As far as
he's
we know.
Far, he is far better known for his work with the White Sox than with the Cubs.
Jerry Reinsdorf.
No.
And for his one leg.
Yep.
Ron Santo?
No. Nope.
Who? Harry Carey?
Bill Veeck.
Bill Veeck.
Oh, I was going to say that. I guess I did know that.
He was a former
really?
Cubs.
You were this close?
Yeah, I could tell. It was right on the tip there. Former Cubs front office assistant Bill Veeck, later owner of the White Sox, planted the ivy all the way back in 1937, the same year that the bleachers and the scoreboard were built. What happens if a ball lands in the ivy and gets stuck there? You know this one.
It's a home run.
Ground rule double.
I don't know. Why would I know that?
Actually, that's not the one that you should know. This is the one you should know. If an opposing player is to hit a home run into the bleachers,
you throw the ball back.
You throw the ball back. You back. You got that one right. What does the W flag mean?
White Sox. Wendy.
Keep going. Keep going.
Wonderful.
No, also.
Win. Who wouldn't know that?
Also Wiggum from The Simpsons.
Say. It means win.
After the Cubs' victory, a W flag, which stands for win.
Can I just ask how that happened? Do you know that, Mr. Know-It-All Cubs fan?
I don't know that. Do you know that, Steve? I don't know
that.
Those
were the people going by on the L, I think.
Is that what it is?
So they would know whether the Cubs won or lost that day.
That makes sense.
Are you making that up?
No, I think
it makes sense. I think that's right. That does sound right. There's a flag on the roof of Wrigley Field that says Hack 191. What does that mean?
I have no idea.
It commemorates...
Who's the hack on the team?
Internet hacking.
No, it doesn't.
It commemorates Hack Wilson's 191 runs batted in during the 1930 season, a major league record that still stands to this day. That's why when you see Hack 191, that's what it means.
That's the guy's name, Hack Wilson?
What about the sign that says Turk 182? What does that mean?
Well, ask Bertrand. I'm not a Cubs fan.
Turk Wendell.
Right.
Are you asking me these questions to make me feel foolish?
No, that was a Robert Urich
movie. I can do that on my own.
What was Wrigley? Now, there's no way you'd know this. I didn't know this. This seems wrong.
God,
but
I hope I know this now.
I hope you do too, just to teach me a lesson. What was Wrigley Field's largest crowd of all time?
The year?
You can give me the year or the attendance.
The first night game.
No.
8888.
Not even close. Nope, not even close.
Are you surprised I knew the 8888?
No, that's great. That's very good. On July the 27th of 1930, 51,556 fans.
You could not get a beer that day.
It was, however, Ladies' Day, so only 19,748 of those admissions were paid. But they fit somehow.
That's what I love about we women. If it's free, sure, we'll
there.
Go.
We're there. Do you ladies like baseball? Not yet. We do not yet. No. How did they fit that many people into Wrigley Field? They let fans stand on the field of play along the warning track of the outfield.
Really?
Hits going into the crowd were then declared ground rule doubles. I'm not sure that would fly today. I'm not positive you could line fans up on the warning track of the outfield. Somebody would put a stop to that.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like a good plan.
There's a sign on one of the rooftops behind right field that reads Emus Catuli, EamusCatuli, and then an exclamation point. And then another sign with letters and numbers. What do those signs mean?
Free beer.
No. Emus Catuli is a Latin translation
for
that
free
means
beer.
Go Cubs.
There is no Cubs in Latin.
Yeah, Catuli is Cubs.
That is made up.
Emus is go, Catuli is Cubs. You know that.
My son took Latin. I should have called him.
Call
there
him.
Is no Latin you, word called lifeline. Cubs.
The Cubs were popular in in Latin. Well, they had Latin American players.
In the Roman times, before right. they would throw the Catholics to the Lions, they'd right. come to the Cubs.
Right.
No one died.
Brickhouse used to call those games, remember?
Exactly.
Hey, hey!
Say that in Latin.
Attaboy, Julius Caesar.
It is caught.
How do you say hey, hey in Latin?
Ugmas, ugmas. That's how you say it. All right, we have more of these fun facts. Some of them may be true. I'm not sure which ones are true. They all seem improbable to me, but they were in the Tribune, so you know they're true. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN. You're making fun of me in Latin.
No, Emus Catuli was said to mean, it says it on a flag there at Wrigley.
Correct.
Field.
Yes. How do you pronounce that again?
Wrigley.
Wrigley?
I'm reading Latin. It's
sure.
got me confused.
It's a dead language.
Emus Catuli is derived from Latin. It technically means "Let's go, little bears,"
which I guess would be Cubs. It sounds like the thing, if you were making a movie about a Ouija board, that somebody would say, and then some ghostly apparition would just show up once you uttered the words "Hemus Cthuli," doesn't it?
Yeah.
I'm almost afraid to say it.
Like a scary abracadabra?
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. There's a bunch of fun facts that have been compiled by the staff of the Chicago Tribune. Should we take some calls first? Do you want more fun facts? Because I have over a million of them.
We can do that till the end of the show.
All right.
But let's talk to some fun listeners. Bonnie's on the line. Hi, Bonnie.
I am a fun listener.
You sound like you're fun, Bonnie.
I'm going to crack open a beer.
Why not?
Well, I'm the one who, during the hawk season, I sprained my neck screaming and yelling.
Yeah.
And Wendy told me to get, I needed a helmet.
Yep.
But I'm calling because.
Boy, that sounded mean. Did I really say that?
You did, but it was funny, Wendy. Yeah. That's what we love about you. I'm reading in my hands the Chicago Cubs, our team, a Cubs fan's journey into baseball's greatest romance, written and photographed by Tammy Lechner, forwarded by Billy Williams.
Oh.
And on page 70 in that book, I know what the numbers are that are on the rooftop.
Oh, yeah. What are the numbers and what do they mean?
You really didn't know?
I don't know.
It's so exciting. I was on this page when you brought this up.
Oh, perfect.
So how scary is that? Okay, it's the number of years since the last division title.
Yeah.
The league title.
Yeah.
And then the World Series title.
But how ironic is it if you go to the United Center, they've got all these banners that show the last time the Hawks or the Bulls won championships, and at Wrigley Field, all the numbers indicate the last time they did it. They don't show you the banners of the teams that won it. It's just this is how many years it's been since we did it.
But I was looking through the book real quickly. My nephew gave this. This is a present for my nephew, Dan Mendro. If you're listening, this will freak you out. he gave it to me for Christmas, past Christmas. And it was a fan pack. There's two books in it. But anyway, on page 100 of this wonderful book, it has this title under a cameraman. The Far Reach of Cable Superstation, WGN-TV, as well as a powerful signal of WGN Radio, often receives credit for extending the popularity of the Chicago Cubs into the hitherlands of America.
That's true. That's 100% accurate. In the early days of cable,
the
Cubs were the only team. Actually, the Braves also followed suit very quickly. But you could see a Cubs game coast to coast. No other team was doing that. So they were way
I
on
know.
Top.
But then I have one other thing. Yesterday was the beginning of early voting.
Yeah.
And I voted early. And I'm not ashamed to tell you that on page 97 of this book, there's a picture of Hillary Clinton, Illinois native Hillary Rodham Clinton, on page 97, joins Harry Carey on an opening day when Clinton threw out the first pitch as First Lady of the United States. And yesterday, I voted for Hillary Clinton.
How about that? It all ties in, doesn't it?
Well, I know.
Bonnie,
that's the way I did that.
Yeah, you made it. You put a
Good
nice
job,
bow on
Bonnie.
It. That was beautiful.
You should get a helmet.
Wendy kept her streak alive, Bonnie. Every time you call, she tells you to get a helmet.
I know. Okay, from now on, I'm Helmet Bonnie.
All right, we'll remember.
When I call in, you'll know who I am.
Yes, thank you for calling, and call back anytime you want, Helmet Bonnie.
This book is great.
Oh, cool.
I just love it. Anyway, have a great day.
Thanks, Bonnie. You too.
You too. Thanks for sharing.
All right, let's do this. We need to take a break. If time allows, there's a couple more of these that I think, if you are a Cubs fan...
Now's the time, Bill. You may not have the time
right.
again,
All right, so
do
we'll,
it.
We've got more of these, so stick around. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder on WGN.
Bark, bark, bark. Bark, bark, bark. I got to tell you, Steve Dale, noted pet expert, is here. You can listen to him on this very radio station, 6:30 to 7 a.m. on Sunday mornings, which I have.
Thank you.
And I told you flat out,
it's
I
you?
Love your jacket.
Steve, when you come on with us, we talk pets, but today let's talk fashion. You have never looked better in your life, sir.
Well, thank you. I've got the World Series cap on, I have this vintage Chicago Cubs coat on that my wife got me like 25 years ago. And I was telling you that people actually have stopped me on the street wanting to buy both of these items.
Because the caps you can't get now.
They're out already. Yeah. And I'm told when they come back, I don't know that this is true, that they're going to charge more for it.
Oh, I don't know.
But I hope not.
But the jacket's stunning.
An authentic throwback, which is a throwback from 20 years ago.
Yeah, well, it was a vintage. Yeah, it's just the coolest jacket. It has a box score in the back of when the Cubs, what was it, 71 years ago, were actually in the series. And it's just the coolest jacket. It's hard to describe.
You know what I would like to see?
We could take a picture and you guys can put it on your Facebook page.
I would like Wendy and I, after the show, to go to a cornfield somewhere and for you to just walk out from some giant blades of corn.
And we'll steal the jacket off of them?
Yeah, and we'll take the jacket.
All right, but I don't want it. You can have it.
That's hold it.
Wait a minute.
You're just gifting. That's nice of you.
But it got you were telling us a man walked up to you in the street,
yes!
saw the jacket, and just said point blank,
$50.
Here's $50.
Which
give
is
me
nothing.
The jacket.
It's worth way more than that. I know it's ripped a little bit, but that is authentico.
Yeah,
my friend.
Yeah, I'm sleeping with it now.
Oh.
Yes.
I do that with all
with
new
the hat.
Stuff. Hmm. I really do. I get new stuff and I sleep with it. New boots. I didn't wear them to bed. I slept with them next to me, hugging
normal.
them.
Oh, okay. Well,
are we learning a bit too much about Wendy and me?
A lot.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk animals. What do we need to know?
Oh, there's a lot. So, are you ready?
Yeah, please.
Blah blah blah.
Yep. Halloween.
Scary. Aren't you scared? So our
no,
yes,
you're not
for different reasons, Steve.
Blah, blah. Our pets actually can get very anxious around this time of year. I'm drooling a little bit, aren't I?
He went to the dentist. He was supposed to get a cleaning, but they said, oh, we found something.
Yep.
It's a boy.
Oh.
And so they decided to give you a filling right then and there. That's the best way to do it.
They actually removed a crown that had...
Dun, da, da, da.
Thank you.
Did they give him nitrous, too?
I think they did. Yes, they did. Oh,
it is weird, though, when your face is numb, you act a little goofy because it's really weird and beyond your control. So
right.
I totally get it.
Well, it's kind of goofy all the time, as you know I am.
But... right. This adds to it.
Yes, it does. So let me go back to what I was saying.
Blah, blah, blah. Right. Halloween.
Blah, blah, blah. Picking up right off. A lot of our pets really do get anxious, and it can be a dangerous time for pets.
Tiki could run out the door.
Yes, that's it. So with that door opening and closing all the time, it is the second most common time of year that pets are lost, actually, next to Christmas. Couldn't think of the word.
You on nitrous.
It's a serious thing.
I know.
So you have the doorbell constantly ringing. You have strangers in the house that the dog's not accustomed to.
Just stress. Now,
There's a lot going on. Now, be honest.
Yes.
Can a dog, like, when somebody has a mask on, are dogs cognizant of the fact that it's somebody who's supposed to be scary, or are they just scared because it's a stranger they're not used to? What is scaring the dog at that point?
Well, it is something that they don't realize what it is, that they're at a distance. So when Wendy comes home, and Tiki certainly knows Wendy. So
right.
Wendy walks in the house. Tiki sees that it's Wendy, is happy that it's Wendy, but still... Tiki is not absolutely certain until Tiki smells Wendy.
Right. Uh-oh. So even if I have a mask on, which some days I do wear too much makeup, he could smell me and know it's me even though I had a mask
on. Right. But dogs that don't have an opportunity to do that because they see all these strange-looking ghosts and goblins walking
clowns.
Up and down the street, or clowns, which is even scarier, or the doorbell rings and rings and rings and rings, and that in of itself is stressful. So more than anything else in the world, what our pets, cats especially, like every day is routine. And there's nothing routine about Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
So the best thing you could do is take advantage of the fact that you have closed doors potentially in your home. So take your pet, put your pet, if your pet is anxious. You know, a lot of pets aren't. I mean, they're really happy, excited about seeing all these people come over, no matter what they look like. Even if they're dressed as Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton, it's okay with those pets. But other pets, not so much. So take those pets, the ones that are expressing anxiety, which include a whole lot of cats, put them in a room, close the door to that room, pump up some classical music, which can relax our animals, close the shades so they don't see all the people going back and forth and back and forth. Also plug in, these are copies of pheromones, natural occurring pheromones.
I heard you talking about this.
Bring some next week or next time I'm on. Feel away for cats. Adaptil for dogs. You could just plug it into the wall like a diffuser. It is a diffuser. And that will also lower anxiety. And once you've got that anxiety lowered, now you can give your dog or cat something else to do. So stuff some treats into a toy. And there are lots of those toys out there now, right? Hundreds of them that you could stuff treats or kibble in. And your dog or cat, too, can roll it around and get some. And if, you know, dogs and cats are not very good at multitasking.
Yeah.
So if they're very busy doing that, they're not going to be so much worried about all the commotion going on.
All right.
That's
so
a good idea.
The diffuser is just like a mist? Does it spray that? No?
No. Is it? So our pets can sense it in the environment.
Yeah.
Smelling isn't even quite the right word, and you won't smell anything, you know, when you plug Adaptil or Feel-Away in at all. It's species specific. So Adaptil, which is for dogs, won't impact cats and vice versa.
And I won't smell it. Like it won't smell like a dog's glands.
Doesn't smell. No, no. That's a whole different kind of smell. But no, you won't smell anything.
That's my Halloween costume, by the way.
There's dog's glands.
Yeah. I'm Glands Campbell. That's my,
The nitrous is leaking from him to you.
How can you come up with that so fast?
I don't know. It's a miracle.
You have writers under
really
the table
isn't.
Handing you.
Yep.
Here's a line. Here's a line. Little people handing you tables.
Sure.
I don't know how you do that.
So you won't notice any difference at all.
Totally not.
Just your dog or cat.
So very specifically, Adaptil, when puppies are nursed by mom, there's a calming pheromone in that milk. And it's a copy of that pheromone. That's what Adaptil is. Feel-Away is when cats rub their cheek pads against your leg or a table leg. They are depositing a pheromone. Similarly, a calming pheromone helps them understand this is my place, my environment, and Feel-Away is a copy of that pheromone.
I've seen you rub your cheek pads
sometimes
against people.
Sometimes I do that, yeah, if I'm in a good mood.
Butt cheek or face cheek?
We have pheromones, and we eat all the time.
Depends on the season, Wendy. Come on.
Well, going right along with that,
yeah.
we have pheromones all the time. So when
don't pay her.
Hmm?
No, that's hormone.
When you met your significant other,
yes,
and you did as well,
yeah.
You and Terry, there were sparks flying. There are all these expressions, right?
Right.
They refer to pheromones.
Yeah.
Her expression was a little bit like, what?
Right. What am I getting into?
Well, that's because she realized. But
right.
Really, really, that's pheromones that are doing
that. Sure, all right.
When you're in love, that's what happens.
Yeah. All right, so depending on your pet, and everybody knows their pet best, you either want to isolate your pet or just business as usual if your dog or cat can handle it, huh?
Mm-hmm. And costumes can be a good thing or not such a good thing. Again, it depends on the pet.
Costumes for the pet, you mean?
Some dogs really love it.
It's a multi-million dollar industry. And in fact, a recent poll suggested that we're getting to the point where it's about 40%. So climbing near 50%, nearly half of all dog owners actually dress up their dog in something. Not as many cat owners, but a lot of cat owners do too. Now, is it fair to the pet? Depends on the pet. So I think if Tiki enjoys it, and there are many dogs.
He doesn't like it.
Yeah, but there are many that do. And for those, what I think they are liking is not your choice of costume so much, but the attention that they get when the costume is put on, because everyone says, oh, that's the cutest little puppy in the world. However, other dogs look... You fool. Yep.
You let them dress you.
Yep.
But that's true, right? There's a dog equivalent of, oh, I hope my friends don't see me. I'm Count Dogula. If any of my friends see this, I'll never hear the end of it.
I think that there's some... they look humiliated, I think, because they in part actually are.
Yeah.
I really think that.
Obviously, chocolate and Halloween candy is bad for dogs, but in overabundance, do you have to panic if your dog sneaks a big dog sneaks a fun-size Snickers?
Yeah, probably not.
But if you have a tiny dog?
But on the radio, I have to be careful what I say because every dog is different. And the real danger of chocolate is the dark chocolate because it has more of this chemical called theobromine in it. That is the concern. So it's dark chocolate that's number one on the list. Yeah, of course, if you have a 100-pound dog that eats just like one of those little mini Tootsie Rolls, probably you're okay.
But keep the chocolate away from
the pets. Yeah, that's the best answer.
Because then you have
Mary
to buy
Jane's
more.
Or Now and Laters. What about those?
Who? What?
Now and Laters or Mary Jane's? I'm just trying to think.
They could choke. That's a choking hazard,
bad.
The Now and Laters.
Those are bad. Chewy candy's bad.
Don't you smoke those?
Well, you can, I guess.
What am I thinking of?
Oh, Mary Jane's marijuana.
Those are like those old candies from the 1930s.
That grandma would have that they are kind of hard and there's a little bit of peanut butter in the middle.
I don't know that candy.
Are you kidding?
No.
I'll get you a picture of one because I know you've seen that they were
from the last time the Cubs won the World Series.
Now, which is on my jacket.
I know. Steve Dale's here. He's a noted pet expert. If you have any questions or comments for Steve, 312-981-7200. Back after this, it's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Noted pet expert Steve Dale is in the studio with us. You're also able to hear him 6:30 to 7 a.m. on Sunday mornings right here on 720 WGN.
And he's dressed like Gabby Hartnett today.
Thank you.
I don't know who that is.
Former Cub.
Catcher.
Yeah,
right?
Cub catcher back in the biblical times.
Pretty much. It's like the 1930s.
He's in the book of Ezekiel. Look him up.
Can we take a caller?
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
All right. These are my favorite questions. Hi, Donna. Steve Dale's here. You have a question?
Hi. I'm living with somebody who has a dog, and they just really don't seem to be doing anything to train it. It jumps on people. It jumps up on the table and the counter when you're trying to either eat or trying to prepare food, and they just really don't seem to do much. And I'm wondering if, while I'm there, is there anything that I can do to try to work with the dog a little bit?
So this isn't a permanent arrangement that you're temporarily staying with someone?
Yeah.
All right. And the dog, it's really kind of hard to train a dog because you have to spend time doing it. But it really isn't good for you or the dog if the dog doesn't have some kind of training. Correct, Steve?
I totally agree. So maybe a leash on the dog, and try to have fun with the dog. Have some treats in your pocket and tell the dog what you want the dog to do and use treats to motivate the dog. And boy, oh boy, your friend will be really appreciative because you'll be the dog trainer, sort of, and then you leave, but now there's a trained dog that you've left behind.
So she's not opposed to it or he's not opposed to it. It's just they haven't trained the dog.
Right. It's just under 2 years old. So he's still, they still kind of like treat it like, oh, well, it's just a puppy.
Well, even puppies ought to know rules. And besides, now you've got 2 years from now, a four-year-old dog that doesn't know the rules, So I see no advantage to that. And in fact, you can teach an old dog new tricks. I mean, that expression really is true.
So how does Donna keep the dog from jumping from someone? Just
leash.
A leash and pull it down and reward it for not jumping?
Yeah, and you might not even need to pull it down. Depending on the dog and how excited the dog is, and I'm assuming it's excitement, not fear. Because dogs will jump
probably,
out of fear.
Yeah.
But if it's a young dog, it's just an excited dog, then give the dog something else to do. Have the dog sit. And if the dog's rear end is down and you reward the dog for sitting with a treat, then the dog can't be jumping.
We have that same rule here in the studio, Steve.
I have to get Bill lobster rolls when he sits,
yep.
So that's the difference.
Yep.
Give the dog some version of that would be liver.
Donna, good luck, because I know that it's not your house, but you want everybody to be happy.
Yeah, and she doesn't want all the cookies to go into the dog's
tummy.
Thanks,
Donna. Yeah, that's true. All right, one more question here.
Sure.
This is Anthony. Hey, Anthony.
Hi.
Hi.
It's Tony, actually. How are you?
Hi, good, Tony.
I have a quick question. I adopted half Afghan Pinscher, half Chihuahua.
A half ass?
What did you say?
You cannot say that.
Affenpinscher.
No, oh, an Affenpinscher. Oh. Yeah, they're little dogs. Yes.
Yeah.
I thought the same thing.
I'm sorry.
You've been to the dentist too, clearly.
Yeah. No, I'm trying to squeeze in a call while I'm at work. It's probably it. So he came home trained, potty trained. He's 15 months old, and I've had him for about 3 months. And we walk him, depending if my husband's away or not, 2 to 4 times a day.
That's
so
good.
We leave pads for him just in case because he's so small, and he goes on the pads. But the problem is lately he's playing with his poo or something because it's spread out around the house, little pieces of
it. Is he a soccer fan?
Yeah, that's what it almost seems like.
And like he's just playing with it.
Toys. Yeah, he's playing with it or hurls it, puts it in his mouth and hurls it like he does with his toy.
Yuck!
By the way, I'm not hungry for the rest of the week.
But dogs do that. Sorry. It's not that rare, is it, Steve?
Can we convince Bill to get a dog? Maybe
not
right
anymore.
Now. This would not be the time.
Anything Tony can do about this?
Well, yeah.
Pick it up first.
Yes, pick it up when the dog... also, you can encourage the dog to do that outside. So if the dog is doing that outside, it's not an issue. You could also leave treats that have better
stuff are shaped
in
like
it.
Poo.
No, just have more.
Did you really?
Yeah, literally. I bought treats that looked like it, same color, same everything, size.
And how did that work out?
He preferred the real thing.
Yeah.
No, it doesn't. I don't know. He doesn't do it in front of us. We catch him doing it. As soon as he sees us, he stops, like he freezes.
But I've seen it. Your dog has put up YouTube videos of this, by the way.
Well, yeah. Now this is a behavioral thing, it seems, right, Steve? You're trying to get more of your attention?
Maybe. I mean, you know, dogs do things to entertain themselves that are... that we don't quite understand, but it's it's entertaining to the dog. What I think is the most entertaining
Get Netflix
thing,
or something.
What I think is the most entertaining is Wendy's expression, thinking, "Oh, this is like hysterical," and Bill's looking like this is the grossest conversation.
I'm queasy. I need Dramamine.
It's a little I guess.
Well, it's bothersome. I can imagine.
I revert back to what I said earlier. If the dog is going outside, then none of this is an issue. So consistent times, consistent feeding, just like your dog was a puppy, take your dog outside and make sure you're there with the dog to pick it up and
but
reward
your
dog.
Can I ask a question? Tony, you said you're leaving pads because sometimes maybe it'll work later. You're not home to take them out. Is that exacerbating the problem? Does the dogs think, oh, my God, the pads are here. May as well use them.
That's where I'm stuck. I'm not a punishing type of person. Neither is my husband. You know, so we almost feel guilty. That's why we leave the pads, because he's 9 pounds. And if I'm not going to see him for 8 hours, which happens about 3 times a week.
A lot of dogs can hold it.
Yeah, 8 hours is kind of on a border for a small dog. But yes, I agree with you, Wendy, that your dog should be able to make it for 8 hours. 10 hours, maybe not. You know, a dog, they're very small FNPs.
So maybe take the pads away? Does the dog go on the pads and then take it off the pads to play?
Exactly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
So before, I've actually heard of this before. So before you take the pads away, train your dog to go outdoors to the best of your ability so the dog doesn't even need the pads.
Okay.
When you know you're going to be gone that long, if possible, if you could afford it, to assuage your guilt, get a pet sitter
or a neighbor,
to come in
maybe.
A dog walker. Right. That's what I meant.
Yeah, that's I figured that was the next step.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, it's good to hear that it's not that uncommon, because I thought I did something wrong. So.
No, Tony, you can't blame yourself.
No.
Although I really thought that this week's episode of Walking Dead would be the most disgusting thing I'd be subjected to all week, and I was wrong. How about that?
Thanks, Anthony. It's not that, or Tony, thank you. It's not, I mean, it's disgusting, but it's.
But
Wendy,
it's what?
I love the reaction.
Things happen.
Sure.
I wish I had a camera so I could take the picture right now, because your reactions are polar opposite.
Wendy enjoyed that little segment.
No, I didn't enjoy it, but I mean, when you have a dog, you're going to find a lone log every once in a while.
Steve, thanks for coming by. Noted pet expert Steve Dale. Where can people find you, Steve, if there's a court deposition?
SteveDale.tv. That is my blog and my website. By the way, I do write about a serious issue. Kristen Lindsay is that lady you might have heard about on the internet.
I saw her. She used a bow and arrow to shoot a cat, which people assumed was a feral cat, but she's a veterinarian, and it was the neighbor's cat.
All true.
What the heck?
Yeah. So the Texas Board of Veterinary Administrators had to make a decision. Do we continue her license? Do we pull her license as a veterinarian? And I have that story up on the site.
I saw it. It's pretty horrific.
Yeah. Terrible.
Yeah.
Thank you, Steve. Good luck tonight.
Yes. Go Cubs.
Go Cubs is right. We'll take a quick break. Steve has the news next. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Steve, thanks very much. Here's the story. We have, I think, more than one of these two. Do we have three, Kevin?
We have a really awesome prize for families.
But three of them?
Yes.
I didn't know that. Okay,
Here's what it entails. We have three of these to give away. A family four-pack of Skate by the Lake ice rink tickets. Here's what's going on. Our friends at the Blackhawks... Jeez.
You can do it.
Our friends at the Blackhawks have given us family four packs of tickets to give away for their Chicago Blackhawks Skate by the Lake ice rink. It's over at Navy Pier. Now until the end of October, you can enjoy outdoor skating at the ice rink located on the west end of Navy Pier. Here's the deal. This Saturday, October 29th, from 11 a.m. until noon, for just an hour, they're going to host a Blackhawks Youth Shoot the Puck contest. The contest is open to fans ages 8 to 13, and one lucky winner will win four tickets to an upcoming Blackhawks game and then have the opportunity to shoot the puck in front of a sold-out United Center crowd. Did you ever do that?
No. I was asked to do it, and I rejected it.
Why?
Because I didn't want to look stupid.
A.
Too late.
Yeah. Two,
I didn't want to do it.
Really?
Yeah.
I think I don't want to do it either.
You know why? Because a lot of times you see it on TV, or if you're lucky enough to go to a game, and a kid will come out and they go nuts because it's a cute kid, and then a girl will come out and everybody goes nuts because it's a beautiful girl, and then the guy comes out and the people just boo you relentlessly. I wasn't ready for that.
The reason I wouldn't want to do it is because when you have to walk out there, they put like a little mat there to get you out, and I'm scared of falling on that.
Down? Yeah.
But then, if I hit it in the hole, that would be awesome.
That would be nice.
Well, registration opens at 10 a.m. this Saturday. Participant slots will be limited, so you are encouraged to get there early. You can go to ChicagoBlackhawks.com for more information, or you can sit tight because we have three family four packs to give away today before we get out of here.
Let's do this. Call us now, 312-981-7200. I have some more. These are things that Cubs fans should know. I know we're switching sports a little bit. It's Cubs and Blackhawks.
But the Hawks just sang the seventh inning stretch.
Yeah. So, right. Three of the Hawks did.
Yeah.
And that would have been the perfect time. You came up with a name for a group. Do you remember this? A couple of years ago, you said, if I started a group right now, I would name it this. So you had three Blackhawks singing at a Cubs game. Shouldn't they have been called the Manny Trio? Wouldn't that have been a perfect name for them?
Oh, yeah. I thought you meant MILF Money because that's
no,
what
that's
I was,
a different one.
That was going to be my band.
That's a different name.
The Manny Trio would have worked out perfectly.
Yeah.
Because it was Siebes, it was Duncan Keith, and it was
Jonathan Taves. Yeah.
And they were enthusiastic.
They sure were enthusiastic.
They were no Scottie Pippen.
No. Thank goodness. They were no Scottie Pippen. So 312-981-7200. I will ask you a question. These are things that every Cubs fan should know, and if you know one of these, you won that. You'll win that fantastic Blackhawks prize package.
Yeah, family four pack to go skate by the lake this Saturday or anytime you choose to go. And thankfully, you're taking the pressure off of me because I don't know a lot of these Cubs things.
I've gotten a couple of them. Some of these are very difficult. Some of them are easier. All right, you want to get a caller on, and we'll find out if they win a prize or not.
Pam's calling. Hi, Pam. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Pam, we're doing great. All you have to do is answer this Cubs trivia question. It should be fairly simple. This one, you might know this. Let's see. Which Cubs pitcher also played basketball for the Harlem Globetrotters?
How do you say that's easy?
This one's
not
easy. This one is not easy. Want to take a shot? Cubs pitcher who used to play?
I don't have any knowledge of the Harlem Globetrotters.
Not at all?
Bum, bum, bum,
no.
Bum, bum,
can you name a Cubs pitcher? He's a well-known Cubs pitcher.
How long ago?
He pitched in the 1970s. But that clue is just for you. I would not give that to anybody else, but we're friends,
I'm
so
sure.
I gave that to you.
Sure.
Did he have
Thank
a brother
you.
Named Paul?
No. No, Rick Rushel did not play for the Globetrotters, Steve. It's a good guess, but no.
Another hint?
He was also a Texas
oh
Ranger.
Oh, my gosh.
I thought so. I got that one.
Did you get that one, Steve? That's a tough one.
The Harlem Globetrotters?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Did he consider running for parliament once?
Actually, yes.
Now, see, they're just like lauding it over you
no,
that they
we're
know
we're
all
trying
this
to
stuff,
help.
Pam.
We're hint. Trying to help. I need a guess from you, Pam. Do you know who it is?
No, I don't.
No? Oh,
I don't know
I'm
it.
Sorry. We cannot give you a prize then. You must give us a prize. That's how it should work. Send us a prize, a valuable prize.
All right, Pam, I'm sorry. This was such a tough one.
Kanaya.
Okay, thanks.
Don't guess it, Steve.
I get through and I can't answer the question.
I know. I'm sorry.
Bill's mean.
I'm not that mean. Slightly mean.
I have tonight's lineup.
Do you?
Yes.
All right. Don't give it yet. Don't give it yet.
She's gone. I feel bad.
All right. Get another. I'll ask the same question, but I'll do it with a different
voice.
Is
this Carice?
Garice.
Garice, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Garice is the word. That's what I've heard anyway. Garice, the same question to you. Name the Cub pitcher who also played basketball for the Harlem Globetrotters. He's a well-known Cub pitcher, one of the finest in franchise history. Pitched in the 70s. Late 60s, early 70s.
It's not Meadowlark Lemon?
No, it's not Meadowlark Lemon.
Curly Neal?
Nope.
Curly Joe Derita?
Nope.
Oh, my goodness. Why does it have to be such hard questions?
Oh, that is, I will admit it is kind of hard. Okay,
you're assuming I was around in the 70s.
Oh, that's true. I was making that assumption, and I shouldn't have. Were you around in the 70s?
I was.
Oh, okay. You almost tricked me.
I was in high school and college.
Oh, man.
Sorry, Garice. Thank you for calling, though.
All right.
You picked the worst question.
This isn't a bad question. This is a great question.
Sue, it goes to you. Hi, Sue.
Excuse me, Sue?
Sue, is that you? It is, right?
Yeah, I'm on. I mean, I didn't know if they said Sue. Sorry.
Oh, that's all right.
This is a hard question. I can't remember when Fergie Jenkins pitched. It wasn't Fergie Jenkins, was it?
Now, you're asking it as a negative. You have to ask it as a positive. Is it Fergie Jenkins like that?
Is it Fergie Jenkins?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, it is Fergie Jenkins. Former Cub pitcher, also played basketball for the Harlem Globetrotters.
Really?
Yes. Yes.
I knew that.
Excellent.
Sue, that's awesome. You have picked up a family four-pack of Skate by the Lake, and the Blackhawks are heading you up with that. So hang on a minute.
Yes. Thank you.
Congratulations. All right. I have more of these.
That was awesome.
Well, yeah. I know some of these are hard. I get that. But, you know, you walk away learning something. You get college credit for the show.
World Series.
Yeah, it's the World Series.
Well, it's not World Series tickets.
Well, you never know.
All right. Well, let's take a break. If you're on hold, stay there, Bill.
Can I just give you this?
This is today's lineup.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry.
That's
yes.
Okay.
Tonight's lineup.
Kyle Schwarber is the DH tonight.
Excellent.
He'll be batting fifth.
Excellent.
Dexter Fowler in center leads off Chris Bryant, Anthony Rizzo, Ben Zobrist hitting cleanup. Then Schwarber, Javi Baez, Chris Coughlin is starting in right field.
How about that?
Addison Russell batting eighth, and David Ross, the catcher, batting ninth.
That is a solid lineup. I would take that lineup over any other in baseball. I like it.
Here we go.
Can't wait. All right, a quick break, and then your chances to win a great Blackhawks prize just for knowing Cubs trivia. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
312-981-7200. Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, and our friends at the Blackhawks have given us a couple of family four-packs of tickets to give away for their Chicago Blackhawks Skate by the Lake ice rink at Navy Pier. And, in fact, this Saturday from 11 a.m. to noon, they're going to host a Blackhawks Youth Shoot the Puck contest. Contest is open to fans 8 to 13. One lucky winner is going to win four tickets to an upcoming Blackhawks game, and then we'll have the opportunity to shoot the puck in front of a sold-out United Center crowd. Registration opens at 10 a.m. Participant slots will be limited, so you are encouraged to get there early. Visit ChicagoBlackhawks.com for more information. We have two more family four-packs to give away of Skate by the Lake ice rink tickets.
There's a lot of symmetry right now between the Chicago Blackhawks and the Chicago Cubs. Three members of the Blackhawks came out to Wrigley Field to sing for everybody's enjoyment the other day. Both seem to know how to win. We've noticed that about both teams. So we have some Cubs trivia that will win you these Blackhawk prize packages. Give us a call right now at 312-981-7200.
Rick is calling from Addison, and since that's one of the streets surrounding Wrigley Field, I'm feeling lucky for you, Rick.
Well, thank you, Wendy. How are you?
Good. You ready to answer a Cubs trivia question?
I sure am.
Rick, good luck. I hope you get this. Here goes. Which TV game show host was the father of one of the Chicago Cubs?
Oh, boy, that is... I know this. The player is Pete Lecocq.
Correct.
Was it Wink Martindale?
No, Wendy, it is not Wink Martindale. That's a great guess.
Another wrinkle?
Yes.
Harry Carey was at this man's club when he had his stroke.
Oh, that's true, isn't it?
Half full.
That's true.
Wendy.
Name that game show host, and you will win the Blackhawks prize
package. Oh, come on, Rick.
You know, it's not coming to mind. Would it be Fergie Jenkins?
No, it's not Fergie Jenkins. No, I wish it were, but it is not Fergie Jenkins.
Dude,
no.
So sorry.
I can't think of it.
So. Oh, man. All right. Well, keep listening because you'll hear the answer.
Okay.
But you'll win nothing.
But you'll win nothing.
All right. Kathy, you're calling from golf, a game?
Yeah, Golf, Illinois.
By Niles, right? East of Niles?
It's right. It's sandwiched in between Niles and Glenview. Yeah.
Is that why Golf Mill Shopping Center has its name?
No, actually, the president of Milwaukee Railroad used to stop at the stop and play golf at the Glenview Club. So they named the stop Golf. So
nice. How about that?
Pretty cool.
Pretty cool.
Yep. Yeah. All right. Same question goes to you, Kath, and that is this. Which TV game show host was the father of a Chicago Cub? And as you heard, if you were listening to our last caller, that Cub is first baseman Pete LeCocq. Who is his dad, who is a pretty famous game show host?
Start whipping out some game show hosts. Just
I will say, oh, yeah, that's the best way to do it, isn't it? Just like... No?
Oh, wait, let me think. Not Merv Griffin, no.
It is not Merv Griffin.
So the ball player we've established, right?
Yes.
Is Peter LeCocq.
Correct.
A lot of times...
Makes me giggle.
Yep, Wendy giggles when she hears that name.
Why?
Yeah, how come, Wendy?
Kathy, nice try. So sorry.
Okay, thanks. Okay,
bye-bye. Enjoy your life in golf.
A lot of times fathers name their sons after someone in the family.
Sometimes they do, yes. Yep.
Oh, I know it.
Do you know it now? You can't win, though.
Oh.
Somebody else has to win. How would the show, which is highly respected, would lose all credibility?
We have no credibility. Lucy, this one goes to you. You're calling from Warrenville.
Is it Alex Trebek?
Oh, no.
Oh.
You are a mean, green bean.
I got excited, but it is not Alex Trebek. Oh. It is not. I'm sorry.
Sorry, Lucy. Thank you.
She
who is
to
the...
say, what is Alex Trebek?
I would have kicked you so hard.
It's not Alex Trebek. It's not.
You're so mean. All right. We've established the player, right?
Yes. That was divulged early on by a contestant who did not get the right answer, but helped others, I think, in revealing the player name.
Donna, it goes to you, calling from Northlake.
How about Circle Takes the Square, Peter Marshall?
Absolutely right. Well
ding,
played.
Ding, ding, ding.
Oh, that was nice. That was nice. Peter Marshall is the father of former Cub first baseman and Royal first baseman Pete LeCocq. He's also the sister of actress Joanne Drew. Wendy, did you know that?
No, but I see why he changed his name.
Yeah.
Donna, hang on. We'll set you up with a family four-pack to go skating.
Thank you.
It's nicely the Chicago Blackhawks Skate by the Lake. And we have one more family four-pack to give away. Do you have another question?
I have another question ready.
Very exciting, Bill.
I think this is the easiest one so far.
Okay.
Usually I build them easiest to hardest. Today, the exact opposite.
Gary, you might be the recipient of the easiest question of the day. You're calling from Hoffman Estates. Hello.
Hello. How are you guys?
Good. Gary, just curious, did you know either of the other two Cub trivia questions? Did you know the answers?
I knew both of them, but now you're going to give me the easiest one, and I'm probably not.
Wouldn't that be something? I think you'll get this. This one really is. I'm not making this up. I think this is a pretty easy question. Who was the last member of the Chicago Cubs to win the MVP award?
That would have been last year, right?
I can't say that. I can't tell you what year.
You're not going to give me any hints?
I can't yet. If we go deeper into it without anybody getting it, I can give out a hint, but I can't just yet.
So name a name that you're thinking.
The last Cub to win an MVP award was
I've been watching every game. What's his name?
I can't say his name because then you'd get it really easily.
Well, first baseman last year. Is that correct?
I can't say that. You have to give a name.
Oh, man, I feel like I just fell into a bottomless pit.
No one wants that.
That's how Bill makes people feel
right,
sometimes.
That's my M.O. I met Bill Leffy, made me feel like I fell into a bottomless pit. Oh, yeah, that was nice. Yeah.
I met you guys up at one of your
not going to help, Gary.
No, I'm just trying to butter you up.
I'm easy. Bill is not so easy.
You're not that easy.
I know. I met you. All right, we need a name. Sorry, Gary, but give us a name. Just come on, do it.
Ryan Sandberg.
It is not Ryan Sandberg.
Oh, so sorry, Sandberg. So nice to meet you, though, at the Hometown Voices Tour. We appreciate you coming out.
He was the guy by the bottomless pit, remember?
A lot of good it did him.
No good at all.
Hi, Bob from Chicago.
Hello, how are you?
Bob, we're doing great. Please tell us who the last Cub was to win an MVP award.
I knew the last two answers. I don't know this, but I'll throw out there Andre Dawson.
It is not Andre Dawson. It is not the Hawk. I'm sorry. He is not the right answer. Thank you, though.
Sorry, Bob. We have another family four-pack of tickets to give away to the Chicago Blackhawks Skate by the Lake ice rink at Navy Pier. And Tom from Lansing, what are you thinking?
Well, I'm in the same quandary. I knew the first questions, and then this one is kind of a mind bender because I don't know if that would be, like, from the All-Star game or, you know, as far as a hint goes.
No, the season MVP, not an All-Star game MVP, but the actual season MVP, the last Cub to win.
Oh, boy. And that's obviously not this season, then.
It will not be, yeah, because they haven't named this year's MVP yet.
Right. See, I think that's where everybody's...
Because it'll probably be Chris Bryant. We don't know for sure, but it looks that way. But who is the last actual winner? Nope, it is not.
How do you spell that?
Maddox?
Who is it?
Greg Maddox?
No. It is not Greg Maddux. A nice try, though. Thank you, Tom. This is, you know, the most painful part of this is I truly believe each one of these people knew the last two, and this one's easier.
Tom, what do you got for us? Make it go away.
Sammy Sosa.
In 1998, Sammy Sosa was the last member of the Cubs to win the MVP award.
He was?
Yes, he was.
See why I didn't like the Cubs?
Because he's a former White Sox, Sammy Sosa.
I know, and he changed drastically. Yep. Tom, you've picked up a family four-pack to go ice skate in the Chicago Blackhawks skate by the lake.
Sweet.
And in honor of Sammy Sosa, juice up before you go skating.
Orange juice.
I meant orange juice.
Tom, hang on. Congratulations. See, I don't know any of these Cubs questions.
Well, but you're not a Cub fan.
I know.
Yeah, but White I wish Sox them well. Ones,
I probably
know.
Wouldn't know a lot of the Sox stuff, too, but more of them than the Cubs.
Yeah, probably. All right, let's do this. Congratulations to everybody who won. We're thrilled that you called in. We'll take a quick break. Steve with the news and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Thanks, Steve. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. Steve, this can't be right. I'm on NFL.com, and they're saying that, you know, the Bears lost their quarterback, Brian Hoyer. They're saying on NFL.com it looks like Kyle Schwarber may be the quarterback for the Bears on Monday. That can't be right.
Well, he's going to take a couple of snaps in the fall league, and they'll see how he goes.
So he holds up.
Yeah, but it could be.
No, your buddy's going to be throwing the ball.
Who's this?
Jay Cutler's back.
Is Jay Cutler back?
Didn't I hear that?
Yeah, he returned to practice today.
That'll turn the team right around.
What if he comes back now and just is unbelievable?
He's been unbelievable since we got him. Yeah, let's see what happens.
Keep an open mind.
That's all you can
do.
No.
Can it get worse? What are we, 1-6?
1-6, and if it weren't for the Cleveland Browns, the only team without a win, and they may not win a game all season.
There's another parallel right there.
Yep. Cleveland and Chicago. We're always fighting for something, Cleveland and Chicago. Mm-hmm. The best at something or the worst at something.
It's the sports karma. We've got the two best baseball teams. So.
Yes.
And what about the basketball team? Isn't Cleveland...
The Cavaliers won it all last
year. Yeah, see? So look.
Right. Yep.
I don't know what it means.
Yep.
But look.
It means something.
Our NHL team crushes theirs.
Every time. Cleveland has never beaten us
at
an NHL.
They can't even freeze the water.
No. Nope.
I'm Cleveland Brown.
There's that.
He should play against the Bears.
We have Chicago Med and Chicago Law and Chicago Blue, and they've got...
Cleveland Brown.
Right.
What time is first pitch tonight?
Well, you know, they've been saying 7:08 all week long, and now I'm on MLB.com, and all of a sudden the game times all say 7:30.
Has it been hacked?
I wonder if it's been hacked.
It's because people are tired of hearing that 1908 stuff.
Yes. I think that's it.
Right.
I think that's it. So sometime between 7:08 and 7:30 tonight you'll see your first pitch.
I did see a couple times where there were like a pregame ceremony starting and then the first pitch maybe.
Well, they do the, especially on game one, they do the long introductions. Right. They introduce everybody on both teams and that takes time. But usually they start that early enough to where the first pitch is usually around the scheduled
time.
Well,
that's what I mean. So maybe that's 7:08.
Oh, then, maybe.
I remember the last time the Cubs were in. No, I don't.
No one
What's
does.
6:30 Eastern time? What would that
That'd be? 5:30 here.
Okay, because I'm going to be watching something on Facebook tonight. I didn't know if I should bring this up, but I think we should.
This is interesting. Go on, say.
Tonight, the Trump campaign, Donald Trump, you know him? He's running for president,
yeah.
Republican presidential candidate. Mm-hmm. He's kicking off a show on Facebook, on his Facebook page. He's going to Facebook Live every night at 6:30 Eastern time, so 5:30 our time, live from the campaign war room at Trump Tower.
Really? And what will this be? Does it say what the show will be?
The show will be hosted by Boris.
Billy Bush.
No.
Get Billy
He's
Bush.
He's done with Billy Bush.
Yeah, maybe.
I thought maybe if he wins the presidential election, he would have Billy Bush become his press secretary or something. But he has washed his hands of Billy Bush.
Trump has said over and over there have been too many Bushes in the White House.
Oh, well, problem solved then. Good. Good.
The show will be hosted by Boris...
Yeltsin.
No, Epstein, a senior advisor to the campaign. Tommy Lahren, a conservative commentator of Glenn Beck's The Blaze.
Yeah.
And Cliff Sims, another Trump advisor. In tonight's inaugural episode, they will interview Trump campaign manager Kellyanne Conway and advisor Jason Miller.
Okay.
The series... not too difficult to get, though.
So you've got the Trump campaign interviewing Trump campaign workers.
Yeah. Yeah.
That'll get you insight.
Just, you know, diverse. Feel the fire. Get
Very
people
diverse.
Excited. Come
like
on.
John Mills interview or John Podesta interviewing Cheryl Mills
right.
or something like that.
Right.
The series, which will stream Trump's rallies directly each night and feature pre- and post-event commentary, comes on the heels of the campaign's Debate Night Facebook Live last week, which brought in more than 9 million views. Now, I know before,
That's
I think
lot.
The second debate, he had the women that had come forth against Bill Clinton.
Correct. Yeah.
Is Bill Clinton running for president? Because I'm kind of confused on this.
No, he's already been president.
And then he had Malik Obama, and I don't know if he did a Facebook Live with Malik Obama before the debate last
maybe.
Wednesday.
I didn't see it, but maybe.
So they had 9 million views.
Sizable.
Members of the media quickly seized on the event, calling it a test drive for Trump TV, the post-election television network that Trump is rumored to be considering in the event that he loses in November.
I have been wondering all along when and or if he loses, when or if, I guess, he loses, what his next move is, and that's a logical move.
Doesn't he already have Trump TV, kind of?
No. Why?
I guess. Well, because he's on TV all the time.
Well, he was on, I mean, the thing
The
that,
Apprentice.
The Apprentice, but now that's going to be Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Oh, that's right.
So he's got
to... So what's he going to do? Like a closed circuit Wayne's World, but it'll be Trump's World?
Yeah.
Schwing!
Trump's
party
world,
on, America!
Party on, excellent. Trump's World.
I mean, is it just going to be like a, like just him?
Just, yeah, I get. I don't know. Yeah, what would he do?
Is he going to have a network?
Oh, I don't
and
know.
And who would be on it?
Oh.
Is that where Billy Bush makes his comeback?
All good questions. I don't know. I'm not sure. I don't know that I'll be watching this tonight, but I would like to see this at some point to just see what kind of structure it has.
There's no structure. Structure.
Just throw anybody on?
I wonder if they'll be swearing.
Is that your deciding factor as to whether or not you watch this? I'll watch it if they're swearing, but
no,
if they're not going to swear, I'm out.
I'm curious about that because, I mean, the internet really doesn't have rules.
No, you can
rules,
swear on the internet
although,
all you want.
Will Facebook allow that?
Oh. Yeah, I've seen, there's plenty of swearing on Facebook. There is. There's a lot of
just
swearing.
Just no nudity?
Right. Yet.
Oh. You can say the word, you just can't show a naked
right.
one.
Yeah, that's the difference.
Interesting. All right, well, that's happening.
Trump TV tonight at 5, did you say? What time?
It's 6:30 Eastern time, and it is, he'll be the
Will
Donald
be
Trump
unbridled?
Show. I imagine so.
I like him when he's unbridled.
Tonight's special guests, Trump campaign manager Kellyanne Conway and Trump advisor Jason Miller.
And comedian Kip Adada. There's always one that doesn't make sense. Wait, really? Yeah, Kip Adada. All right, we'll take a quick break and then a little bit more show, and then Rowan Anna stop by, Bill and Wendy WGN.
right, the Hawks won last night, right?
Yeah, in a shootout.
Oh, they lost.
They lost?
That's
they
right,
lose?
They did lose, yes.
In a shootout,
they
yeah.
lost in a shootout. I thought they won in a shootout. So they're 3-3-1, right? Does that sound right? I think they're 3-3-1.
I don't know. Kevin's checking.
All right.
I can't remember. I didn't watch the talent.
Call Joel Quinville and ask him if their record is 3-3-1, Kevin. But don't put him on the air.
Well, two games ago, Panarin almost got a hat trick.
Yeah, he did.
So
very close.
You can sign up on WGNradio.com/contest, and you could win $10,000.
Speaking of hockey, I don't know if you saw this or not. I don't know. I have no idea how something like this happens. I also have no idea how to pronounce the name of the person that I'm about to talk about. His first name is Ruben. His last name is spelled N-S-E-M-O-H. Would you say Simo? Does that sound about
Simo.
Right? N-Simo? You would pronounce the N in that? N-Simo.
Well, why would it be there if you didn't
Seems
pronounce
like
it?
The N shouldn't be there.
Then
it's like
don't
it's
say
leftover
it.
From the Reuben part. You ever had a leftover Reuben?
Yeah.
Not pleasant.
They're
is
a little
it?
Soggy.
They're too soggy. When Reuben N-Simo, that doesn't seem right to me. I want it to be.
It doesn't seem right.
N-sync.
See?
N-sync.
It worked for them.
When Reuben N-sync woke up from a three-day coma in Georgia.
Oh, that's funny.
But no, wait. I know it's not. Nobody wants to be in a three-day coma. But listen
days
to what. There are. All right. There are times. But listen to this. He's in a three-day coma, Wendy, in Georgia. And then when he woke up, he spoke Spanish instead of English. Prior to this, Ruben N-Simo never spoke Spanish before.
See, I've heard a lot of these situations happening, and I don't know how it works, but I know it's better than Rosetta Stone.
It is better than Rosetta Stone. Instead of studying Rosetta Stone, get
just boom, there it is.
In a coma, and then you come out, you speak a foreign language. How does that happen? A player kicked the 16-year-old goalie from Brookwood High School, that's located in Snellville, Georgia, in the head when he dived for the ball. Now, I would have said dove. No, I would have said dove too, but it says here dived, and this is in Incorrect Grammar Magazine. I'm reading this direct. And Ruben was having seizures before paramedics put him in a helicopter and then rushed him to the hospital. Traumatic brain injuries can cause short and long-term changes in language. Okay, I'll give them that. I understand that it could change your language speech pattern, but if you have no familiarity with a language, he spoke no Spanish. How does this happen?
See, that's what I don't get.
I don't get it
because it's like all of a sudden you can speak it fluently.
Right.
And knowing my luck, it would be Latin.
Oh.
So I could only talk to my son who took Latin and the Pope.
Or, right, members of the church, right.
But I could read my prescriptions a lot better. Twice a day?
Right. It says it right here. Ruben said he has a lot of Spanish-speaking friends, which you only usually say if you've been accused of some sort of racism, which he wasn't. His friends, it says, speak the language when he is around. Okay, so he has access to it. It's
and
not
he's
like,
probably picked up on some of it.
I bet. I bet he has. He believes that this might have something to do with the strange episode that shocked and confused his parents. He says, my friends would always talk to me in Spanish, and they would teach me.
Oh, well, then that's your answer.
This is it. Yeah. He didn't speak it, but if his friends were trying to teach it to him, he had little bits and pieces in his head. It's not like he spoke some language from a land a billion miles away that he'd never heard of. It's Spanish. It's not that hard. I wasn't perfect, but my brother, or his tío, Wendy, is a really fluent Spanish speaker, he says.
Well, his brother is?
Yeah.
Well, then come on.
Oh, wait, tío is uncle. Hermano, right? Is that brother? I think tío is uncle.
I took French.
Hermano.
Essay.
Oh.
You're correct, Bill.
Oh, it's Hermano? Is that what it is?
Hermano, yeah.
Why are you doing Charles Nelson Reilly?
I miss him. He, more than anyone, would have loved the Cubs in the World Series, Wendy, and that's how I honor Charles Nelson Reilly, by talking like him. Oh. So,
or is it Paul Lynde?
Might be Paul Lynde. I don't know. So he kind of inspired me with that, he says. As he recovered, Ruben N-Simo started to speak English again.
Started
to speak English. He later talked to reporters while recovering at home.
In Spanish?
I guess. I would have asked for Geraldo Rivera. I would have said, there's only one man I will speak to, and that man is Geraldo Rivera. Sometimes I daze out, Ruben told WSB-TV reporter. WSB-TV reporter. Sometimes I feel like I'm not there, but I am. I don't know why he would share that. I would just be amazed at the Spanish part. The rest is all extra. His parents said it was his third concussion. Wow.
Third time's a charm.
This is why I play ping pong. Do you know how many ping pong concussions there have been since the dawn of man? Zero. Nobody gets a concussion from playing ping pong. This kid's 16. He's already had three of them. But he said he hopes to return to the field. He said he still plans on not wearing a helmet. He's very defiant. Muy deficiano. I don't know what that is. Did I say Jose Feliciano? Yes. I think I did. It's my passion. It's the only thing that I want to do for my career, said Simo. A family friend set up a GoFundMe page to help Ruben's parents.
Understand Spanish?
Yeah.
here's money for a translator.
Right, right. Get yourself a Spanish translator so you can talk to your boy. How in the world? I don't understand that. All right.
I know, and I've heard it before.
Right. Other people have had this happen. All right. Now, in his case, to be fair, you have pointed this out. He had access to Spanish. He had friends who not only spoke it but tried to teach it to him. So that's not that hard to fathom. But you've heard other stories of people who just all of a sudden speak Croatian, and you go, well, right. How did that happen?
Yeah, that I don't get. But this, you know how you can subliminally pick up things?
Yeah.
And a lot of times, I've never done the Rosetta Stone, but I've heard about it, and you listen to it. So sometimes, even though maybe you're not actively listening, it's getting into your brain.
Sure.
So if his friends are speaking Spanish around him quite frequently, that would leak in there somewhere.
Do you remember when we were kids, there was a common belief that you could listen to stuff in your sleep? Like, you'd put headphones on and listen to, one of those Rosetta Stone courses.
And wake up the next day.
You could speak Japanese all of a sudden.
There's some truth to that, though.
Do you think there is?
Yeah, I do.
Don't you need to be more cognizant, though, to really, focus? Like, if you're sleeping, you're dreaming or having nightmares, you wouldn't be thinking about what you're hearing on a tape, would you?
If you were dreaming in, what language were you learning, Japanese? If you're learning or dreaming in Japanese and it's a hot dream, you'll remember that.
Oh, maybe. Maybe.
And they do that a lot. There are a lot of subliminal ways you can learn.
I guess. I wonder if that was, could, when we were kids, you heard about that quite often. I don't remember the last time I heard about it. It's been decades since anybody said, if you want to learn something, just have it play over and over in your head while you're sleeping, and it'll just stick to your head. I got other things sticking to my head. I don't need more stuff sticking to my head.
Yeah, you do have too much red. There's no room for new stuff in your head.
I know.
All right, we have to take a break, and then Rowan and I are here, and Cubs game tonight.
Either 7:08 or 7:30, depending on who you trust. We're getting conflicting reports, but sometime tonight, the Cubs will square off against the Cleveland Indians.
We got to take this call. It's our friend Ruben from Ecuador.
Ruben!
Hello.
How are you?
What's up?
Well, you are talking, hello again, this is your friend from Ecuador. You are talking about Spanish speaking. It happens that I'm an English teacher. I've been an English teacher for 23 years. And the point is that, you cannot actively remember and produce some of the language you have learned, but it is stored somewhere in your brain.
Sure.
So that's why it can actually happen.
Wow. It's imagine some of the stuff stored in Bill's brain.
Yeah. Think about what's
in
there.
If we had access to it, I think we'd be very afraid.
Besides that, both of you, believe it or not, for example, you already, without knowing it, you already understand 20,000 words in Spanish because they resemble English. For example, radio program or radio station in Spanish is estación de radio, programa de radio. And there are more than 20,000 words that resemble between, English and Spanish. So that's why there are reasons that are very plausible, very possible.
Well, that's pretty fascinating.
Because the languages share a lot. There's a lot of similarity between the two languages, obviously, right?
Yeah, the name of these words are cognates. In fact, I have a free website, cognates.org, where you can find thousands of similarities. Again, even before you start learning, in your case, even before you start learning the Spanish language, you already understand thousands of words. The same thing with English language learners. Even before they engage in the process of learning English, they already understand lots of words. Of course, that not all the teachers exploit this linguistic asset, but it's there. That's what I try to do in my life. I try to promote Cognates as a great resource and motivating resource for English language learners.
You have hypnotized me with your voice, Ruben, and you've shared some wonderful information. But we have to go because Ro and Anna are coming. Please feel free to call from Ecuador whenever you want.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Gracias, Ruben.
Arrivederci.
Arrivederci
is
Italian. Yep.
Ciao.
Ciao.
Ciao, baby.
Ciao, fun. That's Thai food. All right, we'll take a quick break. And
Foon.
Then...
Puff Foon.
It's me in English and in Spanish. I'm a doofus in two languages. Can you tap that? Ro and Anna will be in next. It's Phil and Wendy WGN.